Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premiere Networks on Sunday, July 16th, 2017. This is episode 1405. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by WordPress. WordPress powers 28% of all websites, including my own. Get 15% off your new website at wordpress.com/techguy. That's wordpress.com/techguy. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/techguy. And by Eero. Never think about Wi-Fi again with Eero's hyper-fast, super simple Wi-Fi system. And now, the second generation Eero is tri-band and twice as fast. For free overnight shipping, visit Eero.com, E-E-R-O.com, and select overnight shipping at checkout. Then under the offer code, TechGuy. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smart watches and augmented reality and artificial reality and real reality and all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number here that will ring the phone. I've turned off the ringer, but I have somebody who will answer it. Kim Schaffer's here. So she's in another room, so the phone rings in there, and she can answer it and say, hello, get ready. She comb down the cowlicks and powder your nose and get you ready for your appearance on national radio. 8888-ASK-LEO. Questions about anything to do with technology, suggestions, recommendations. You can yell at me, but remember, I control the button. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. We're still playing with our, I'm still playing with my Echo Show. That's the Amazon device that you talk to, but this one has a screen so you can see the answer. You can put your pictures up there. You can call people, video, make video calls to people. I gave one to my 84-year-old mom, and she says it's the best gadget she's ever had because she could say, Echo, show me the doorbell. The front door. Show me the backyard. She said, can I see the backyard? I said, Mom, do you have a camera back there? She said, no. Then you can't see the backyard, but I will put a camera. So I'm going to go out there and put a camera up for her so she can. And then she said, don't put a camera in the backyard. I don't want to know. But these Echo shows are, I have to say, interesting. And I think Amazon is in. Don't you think Amazon is kind of interesting? I feel like, are you a Game of Thrones fan? You know, Daenerys Targaryen, the dragon lady, she's got dragons. And like she's been, for five seasons, she's just been biding her time. She's just been taking care of the dragons. Dragons a little unruly. Every once in a while, they go kill a bunch of sheep. But yeah, she's a bad dragon. Hits them on the nose. She had to chain them down for a while. You know, though, that at some point, those dragons are going to come into play. They're going to release the dragons, right? I feel like Amazon is like that. Like, over the last 10 years, I know they are. Over the last 10 years, they've been stealthily, quietly. You work for Amazon. I'm sorry. We have one of our audience members happens to work for Amazon. Slowly, stealthily, quietly. But, well, I'll give you an example. When Amazon first started, actually, you've got to read the mission statements. As Amazon has evolved, they've slowly revealed what they're secretly up to. How long have you been at Amazon Web Services?
Year and a half.
Oh, you're new. You don't know this. It's great. There's
like
a 10. Yeah, it feels like 10. Yeah, you're working hard. I think Jeff Bezos, yeah, I'm sure he's a hard guy to work for, but I think he's one of the smartest guys in tech, one of the best CEOs in the world. And I think in some ways he's not fully appreciated because he's sandbagging. He's a sandbagger. So when Amazon first started in 1997, Their mission statement, as filed in their corporate S-1 report, was Amazon.com's objective is to be the leading online retailer of information-based products and services with an initial focus on books. Even then, they kind of said, you know, we're just going to start with books here, but we got to – there's something – we want to be the leading online retailer of information-based products. And after a while, within a few years, they changed. Their vision changed. And I think it's actually telling what they changed to. Our vision is to be the earth – by the way, notice the use of the earth. Not U.S. Earth. I might as well say the universe. Let's just say the universe, Jeff. Get it over with. Our vision is to be the Earth's most customer-centric company. To build a place where people can come to find and discover anything they might want to buy online. So now he's saying, well, anything you want to buy online, we'll sell. And when we do it, we're going to be very customer-centric. We're going to focus on the customer. And that's really, I think, one of the secrets to Amazon's success, right? Easy returns, you know. But they're brilliant marketers, too. Look at Amazon Prime. You pay them for the privilege of shopping at Amazon. What? And we go happily, don't we? Yeah, thrilled for that two-day shipping. Glad to pay $100 a year. No problem. So then they reduced their mission statement one more time a couple of years ago. This is Amazon's current mission statement. We seek to be the Earth's most customer-centric company, period. They don't mention shopping anymore because it's not about just shopping anymore. I mean, ultimately, that's how they make their money, right? They take a penny or two. In fact, Ben Thompson, who's a great analyst, said that really, if you really want to boil it down, what Jeff Bezos is saying, what he's thinking, is Amazon's goal is to take a cut of all economic activity, period. Like a penny or two of everything that happens, every transaction. And they're moving that way, aren't they? So when they first started and they're selling books, they didn't make any money. They lost money. They actually were one of the first companies to pioneer this technology that is now widely used in the tech industry of just spending billions to make millions. It's a little weird. You look at a company like Uber that's never made money, and yet they're valued at, you know, multiples of billions of dollars. And it's because everybody says, well, in the end, they're going to win. And I think Amazon really established this. For a long time, they took every penny they made and they plowed it back into the business. They built warehouses and fulfillment centers. They built a network. They didn't make any money. And after a while, in fact, the stock market kind of soured on them. They had to go borrow money. Then it got harder and harder to borrow money because people didn't believe what Jeff Bezos was doing. Man, they should have. Because I've always said this. I think he has a big knob. You can confirm this for me. I think he has a big knob in his office that says profit. And he can turn that knob. And so right now, you know, for a while it was like negative. And then he goes, yeah, you know, I'd like to make a little money. So he turns the knob. And lo and behold, they make a little money. But that knob, it goes to 11. He could go if he wanted to, and he's getting there if he wanted to. So I'm looking at things like, well, this Echo device, it's not selling stuff. It's artificial intelligence in your house that you talk to. Oh, but wait, one of the things you can do with it is buy stuff from Amazon. So it's a great, you know, this Echo replaces your store, doesn't it? That becomes a store for you. I buy stuff on it all the time, you know. I'm shaving. I run out of blades. I go, I won't do it now because it'll buy me some blades. But I'll say, Echo, buy me. I'm not talking to you. Echo, buy me some razor blades. And it'll buy me razor blades. And I don't even have to. And then in 2 days, they arrive on my porch. So the latest thing.
I don't know that one.
Yeah, I know you don't. The latest thing is Amazon is working on. I bet you know about this. Amazon is working on a messaging program called Anytime. Amazon Anytime. And, you know, I think what happens is Jeff Bezos looks at Google and they say, you guys are blowing it. They look at Facebook. You guys are blowing it. Oh, come on. So they come up. They said, I think we should do a messaging platform. By the way, on this messaging platform, sure, you can shop at Amazon. You better believe it. But you can also text message anyone. It says, from text messages to video chat and a whole lot more, connect with all your friends and groups in an instant. It's free. It's fast. It's always secure. It's got encryption built into it. You could put photographs on there. You can use it to order food, to play games, to split a bill, to do location sharing. You can listen to music in a group. Don't think that Amazon is... They're releasing the dragons. Here they come, kids. You know, they're not little eggs anymore. And I think in a couple of years you'll look back and go, wow, where'd they come? What the heck? I thought they were just a bookstore. 8888-ASK, Leo's the phone number. Let's talk high tech. What do you say? 888-827-5536. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Your calls coming up next. Leo Laporte, jamming with you. Talking high tech. Also with us, I'm not doing this alone. I have a veritable army of one. Kim Schaffer is also here. Kim, I like the orange. That's good.
Orange, good.
On a hot day like this, is it hot out there?
It's hot.
When you sit in a studio, air-conditioned studio, you know, yesterday I was in the studio all day doing the show, and I got up and I went out. And it was 96 degrees, and I went,
oh,
it was hot yesterday.
Yeah, it was super hot yesterday, and it's going to be worse today.
Oh, good.
Stay in the studio.
I look forward to it.
Yeah.
It's summertime.
Summertime.
So you've been, it's amazing. On a day like today, she has to slave over a hot phone.
be anywhere else.
You've prepared some fine callers for us.
Yeah, we've got Paul in Houston. He's going to Croatia, and he needs a recommendation
I love Croatia.
Service.
Talking about Game of Thrones, that's where a lot of it's filmed, is in Croatia.
Is it?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Hey, Paul, Houston, Texas, where they laugh when we say it's hot here in Northern California.
Yeah, it's a little warm today. It's about 94 out right now.
Yeah.
So.
But what's the humidity? That's the key. Oh, in the Gulf,
it's hot and wet.
Yeah, hot and wet. Well, it's good to have you on, Paul. Thanks for calling. What can I do for you?
Well, long-time listener, and I just wanted to give you a quick call. My wife and I are going to Croatia on Saturday, and we both have AT&T phones, and when we went about 3 years ago, they stuck it to us.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm just so I'm wondering, what is the best... Should we go get a new SIM card, like a T-Mobile? What's the best game in town? We're going to be there about a month.
Oh, see, impacts it. So AT&T was really influenced by T-Mobile. Remember a couple of years ago, T-Mobile said, you know what, we're not even going to charge you when you go overseas for data. It'll be a little slow, but you'll get data in most of the world. You'll get free international texting, and then the calls will be a little more expensive, but not as bad as they used to be. The thing is, nobody makes calls. Data and texting is all you really need. The problem is if you get a SIM in Croatia, you will now have a Croatian phone number. So it's usually cheaper to buy local data. The reason data costs so much is because data roaming costs so much. So AT&T has to make a deal with some company in Croatia so you can ride on their network. And then the company in Croatia charges AT&T an arm and a leg, and they pass it on to you. T-Mobile, because they're owned by the German company Deutsche Telekom, was able to make this happen because they had better relationships worldwide. But they really changed the market. And AT&T and Sprint and even Verizon, which used to be the worst for traveling, have really changed their tune. So AT&T now has what they call the International Day Pass. And for a week or two, it's not a bad deal. It's $10 a day, and you get unlimited data. Unlimited talk and text. So it really works well for international travel. Of course, you have to check the country because it's not available in all countries, but most countries. However, you're staying for a month. That makes it $300. That might be more than you'd want to pay.
Right. The workaround I did last time is I think they gave me like 800 megs per cycle.
Yeah, they used to do that.
We were there for a month, so I got two 800 meg.
Yeah, they don't do that anymore. They've replaced this with a day pass.
And what I did last time is I just used Skype and rolled over to my cell phone number. So if anybody called my cell phone number, it would just ring on my Skype.
You staying in a hotel?
No, we're staying in the middle of nowhere on the Dalmatian coast. My wife family's from there, and so they've got a nice house down there. We're going to be staying.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Well, maybe they have Wi-Fi there. See, that's the nice thing.
Yeah, They do have Wi-Fi there, but I just kind of, you know, we're going to be venturing out a little bit, and that's why I was just wondering. I know you talked about the fee or the Google, and I don't know if that's like an option, but I guess for a month it's just not a not very optimal.
Google Fi, which is their own carrier, rides on Sprint and T-Mobile and U.S. Cellular, and they do have the same kind of it's not exactly like a T-Mobile deal. They charge you the same amount anywhere in the world. So it's $10 a gigabyte, and it's the same if you're in Croatia as if you're in the U.S. So I do use Google Fi overseas. The problem with Google Fi is you have to have a Google phone.
Right.
If you have a Google phone, you can get a Google Fi SIM for a month, you know, and just pay the month.
I was hoping you were telling me I had to buy one, so I was telling my wife.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. You should have told Dick. Paul, you know, you've got to buy a Google Pixel phone, and then life will be better.
That's what I was hoping.
Get a Pixel. No, those are nice. So there's other options.
Call AT&T and really kind of work out something with them?
They might, if you call them, they might say, okay, well, we'll give you a monthly deal on it. But listen to what they charge if you don't do this. It's $2 a megabyte. So there's a 1,000 megabytes in a gigabyte. That's $2,000 a gigabyte.
If
you're on a cruise ship, get ready for this, because, you know, they have the cruise at sea or cellular at sea thing. $8 a megabyte, $8,000 a gigabyte. And they actually will charge you that. They really will, as you know. So airlines, you ready? If you're in the air and you're using the cellular in the air, $10 a megabyte. A megabyte. That's $10,000 a gigabyte. And they will charge you. They'll send you a bill. You will get a bill that says, oh, you used a gigabyte in the air. That's $10,000. How they get away with that is beyond me. So, yeah, you should negotiate something with AT&T. Do not just go. When you get overseas, if you haven't done that, immediately go into your settings on your phone and turn off what they call data roaming, because that's the thing that'll kill you. That's because when you get there, the phone, if you don't otherwise tell it, will just say, oh, good, I'm on Croatia Cellular. Let's just use that data, and you'll get that big bill. So turn off data roaming.
Could I, by chance, when I get there, use one of their local SIM cards?
You can. So, as I mentioned, you'll have a Croatia. Yes. Well, okay, depends on the phone. AT&T probably has locked that phone. So that's called carrier locking, which means you can't put another carrier SIM in there. But the good news with AT&T is you can call them and say, please unlock my phone. You can actually do that with the AT&T app on your phone as well. And if you're, you know, there's some conditions. You have to have had the phone for 6 months. You have to be in good standing and that kind of thing. But if you fulfill those conditions, they'll unlock that phone for you. And if you don't fulfill the conditions, call them and say, I'm going to be overseas for a month. They'll unlock it for that month. Then you can put a Croatian SIM in. Now, before you do that, visit the website. And I'm just going to just Google prepaid with data, because it's a wiki. It's prepaidwithdata.wikia.com. It's a ridiculously long URL. But if you Google prepaid with data, this is a wiki where people, after they travel, go, well, I got the best deal on orange.fr, and this is how much it costs, and this is where I got all the information about using international SIMs for data is there. And that's a really useful site for travelers, prepaid with data. I'll put a link in the show notes at techguylabs.com, too. So those are the kind of the three ways you can do it. You can get a carrier like T-Mobile or Google Fi that offers very inexpensive international. You can negotiate with your existing carrier and try to get the best deal possible. You know, the generic deal from AT&T is $10 a day, which is it's a lot better than it used to be. Those 800 megabytes, remember how much those cost? It was like $100, right?
Yeah.
Or you can get a SIM card in country, but then you've got a new phone number and you have to kind of work with that. And you know, you'll be using that carrier, so you have to pick the carrier carefully and make sure it works in where you're going. Have a great trip. What a beautiful place. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We've been to Split in Croatia, and that's where parts of Game of Thrones were filmed in Diocletian's castle. That's actually where the dragons were kept in the basement there. So it's kind of fun. You're going to have a great time. A beautiful area.
Yeah.
You've been there before, I take it.
Yeah, my parents or my in-laws, my father father-in-law is from Zagreb, and then my mother-in-law is from the Dalmatian coast.
How beautiful.
So there, and then, and my daughter, my wife is first generation born here, so it's nice to go back, and all of her family's there. So
yeah. Do you have kids?
No, we don't. Lots of animals, though.
Do you have a Dalmatian? That would be funny if you had a Dalmatian.
No, we got two horses and four dogs and lots of chickens. So
you don't need kids.
It's going to cost more to put up our animals.
I know. Holy cow. Yeah, Dalmatia is gorgeous. I envy you. You're going to have a wonderful month. And I bet the weather will be gorgeous, too.
Yeah, I bought the TG5 underwater camera.
So good choice. You're going to love that. That's a great camera.
It's a little stifling. All the settings are kind of, you got to learn how to shoot with the settings, you know, that they give to you. But other than that, it's pretty cool. And I got the fisheye lens, and so I'll be doing lots of scuba.
Oh, you're going to have a great time. You're going to have a great time. It's really fun. I did some snorkeling with that TG5, and you get amazing video. It's really fun.
Good.
Have a great
trip. Thanks for your time and your help.
My pleasure.
All right, man.
Take care.
All right, take care.
He's been everywhere, man. Johnny Jets here. He's our guru of travel. Every week joins us, usually on Saturday, but sometimes on Sunday, because he's, well, a traveling man, to share his tips on traveling better through technology. Hi, Johnny.
Hello, Leo.
In Toronto today.
I'm in Toronto. That's where my wife grew up, and so we're here with the little one.
Natalie,
with his cousins.
Natalie, so Jack, your 9-month-old, Natalie shared a wonderful picture on Instagram. Can I share it? The other day, she was trying to work at home, because Natalie's, of course, a great travel blogger, and she... poor Jack was in one of those cages they put kids in. They call them playpens. and he just wouldn't. He said, "Mommy, need to be near me." So there's a great photo of her. You probably took it because it's over her shoulder.
I did take
working
it.
On the laptop next to the playpen. It was very cute.
Well, he didn't want to go in the playpen, and she had to work.
Right.
So she took him out, and then she got in the playpen, and then he wanted to get into the playpen. It was funny.
Mommy's anyway. In the playpen. So you were listening when we were talking with our previous caller who was going to Croatia.
Yes,
and he's on AT&T. Verizon is, and AT&T have at least come along a little bit. T-Mobile and Sprint have the best international travel plans now.
For sure. So, there's three things you recommended. He could get a local SIM card. So when you get to the airport, you can actually buy a cheap phone. And a local SIM card.
Oh, that's a good idea. Get a second phone.
It'll probably be under $100, or just buy an unlocked one here online.
It won't be though a smartphone, will it? It'll just be
But it depends what he wants it for. So he has Wi-Fi at home. So I use T-Mobile everywhere. They're in like 100 and something countries, and Croatia is one of them because I was there last summer. Or the summer before. And,
so
you know,
beautiful there.
You get free data, and then it's, I think it's 20 cents a call. So as long as you're not on the phone all the time and you just wait till you make your Skype calls from either somewhere where there's Wi-Fi or at your house, it's a much cheaper way to do it.
See, I'm never focused on the phone part because I don't ever make phone calls. I mean, for emergencies, you want to be able to people to reach you, But really, I'm most focused on data because I want to be able to. I mean, it's so useful when you travel. It really has transformed travel to have Google Maps. So I can leave the hotel and not, in the past, you'd be nervous. Can I find my way back? But now you know exactly where you are at any time. You can say, get me back to the hotel. You can, in many cases, call a cab or an Uber. So transport's easy. And if you want to find a restaurant, you're in a neighborhood. We've had great success. Just, finding, using the smartphone to find restaurants. So
for
it's
sure.
Really a great travel tool.
I would look into going to T-Mobile and just getting a second line just for the trip and see how much that costs.
That's what we end up doing. Everybody, when we travel, everybody's on T-Mobile generally.
Yeah, and I'm in Canada, and T-Mobile is the same as, I can make as many calls as I want here. It's included. It's just like being in the U.S., same with Mexico.
Yeah.
And I don't get paid by T-Mobile, by the way, at all. I used to rag on them all the time, but they really did make travel so much easier. My wife and I would travel, and she was on Rogers here in Canada, and she would have a $1,300 bill, and I would have nothing.
Right. T-Mobile says, well, we'll give you data, but it'll be slow data, like 2G or maybe 3G. But that's not been my experience. When we were out of the country in South America last month, I was getting nice high-speed data everywhere. I went in Peru and Ecuador. So
yeah, some places they'll give you some.
You can get LTE
faster.
Yeah.
Last summer I was in Europe. I think they had a deal for 4 months. They're giving you 4G.
They keep extending these deals. It's only going to be 4 months, and then it's we're still doing it. I'll be in France in the fall. I'll let you know if they're still doing it.
All right. Well, speaking of Canada and using apps, so I went to a really cool restaurant yesterday called Tironi. It's in actually in L.A. and Toronto. It's an Italian restaurant, really good food. And we parked the car at the closest parking lot next to it. I was like, Natalie, I can't believe it's $15 to park here for an hour and a half. And she's like, oh, that's how much it costs in Toronto. So we get in and we're meeting one of my buddies. And he's like, oh, you should use the app, Best Parking app, which I think I've talked about a long time ago, but I forgot about it because I had it on my phone. And he goes, I found an app, a parking lot a block away from there for $5 for 2 hours.
Oh, because he had the app.
Exactly. And I felt like such a fool. But, you know, this $10 mistake, I'm trying to save other people from doing the same. And I was, and so no matter where you are, there's 115 airports, 105 cities in North America, so U.S. and Canada, you can find the cheapest parking. And it makes a difference. I mean, literally, if I just logged onto this app, I would have saved $10 and it would have took me 10 seconds. And so, it'll tell you the hours of operation. If you put in how long you're going to be there, it'll calculate the fees.
What's the name of this?
Best Parking.
Best Parking.
B-E-S-T. Yep. Best Parking. It's a free app, iOS and Android. And if you find a place that doesn't have accurate information on the app and you report it, and they verify it, they will send you a $5 Starbucks gift card. That's how accurate everything is.
Nice. Find a good parking space. And you can it looks like you can do it online as well.
You can. So you can just try it for somewhere that you know and just see the difference in rates. I was astonished that where we were at this restaurant, the prices just varied from $5 to $20, and we paid $15.
Toronto has some great restaurants. You ever been to Barbarian Steakhouse in Toronto?
No, I haven't.
Go on in there. Aaron Barbarian's a good friend. Tell him Leo sent you, and he'll give you, a kiss. I don't know what he'll do, but it's a really great steakhouse.
Well, my buddy ordered the seafood pasta, and he asked for cheese. I was like, oh, my dad would not be go for that because you don't put cheese on seafood.
You don't put cheese on seafood pasta?
No. So anyway, he asked for cheese, and the waitress said, sorry, we're not allowed to put cheese on seafood pasta. I was like, are you kidding me? I go, he likes to have cheese on it. She's like, sorry. I was like, then I'll have some cheese on the side of my pomodoro pasta.
Just put it on the side.
She goes, we're not allowed to put it on the side. I go, that is ridiculous.
Okay, I'm not going to that restaurant.
Yeah, I mean, the
customer
food is really
always
good.
Right. Yeah,
exactly.
I've been in restaurants where
the
chef is a bigot, and then you ask for salt. They say, no, it's perfectly salted. You don't need any.
Exactly. I did not like that. I disagree with you.
Yeah.
I mean,
you could put.
I can understand in Italy they do that in Italy, but
I didn't know that. You've saved me some social embarrassment. See, this is a great segment. Now, usually you have a website for us too.
Yeah, I do. So here's a website called Baby Ears. So it's BABIERGE.com.
Wait, IERGE. Oh, so like a concierge with a baby.
Exactly. That's
is
what
it
exactly
like Boss Baby? I hope not.
So actually, my wife found this site because, you know, when
you
we travel, 98% of the time before we had a baby, we would travel without carry-ons. So when we went up to Seattle last week, you know, we're only going for a few days. She's like, but we need to bring all this other stuff for the baby. So she found this site, which actually uses a social economy, and they will rent you a high chair or a crib or whatever you need, toys. For,
so you
like,
tell them where you're going, and then they say, oh, good, we got you covered.
And we got to the hotel, and it was all waiting for us.
Oh, this is great.
And they brought it up. And so he had diapers. Oh. They brought books, games.
I always feel bad for families traveling with infants because they usually have 18 bags of gear, right? The playpen and the diaper and the stroller and the oi.
So
that's
we went
nice,
up with,
baby ears.
With just carry on.
So it's like concierge with BAB. This is, you know what? They got to change the name though. BABIERGE, baby ears.
I'll tweet it out and I'll put in the chat room right after I'm done with this. But, you know, and we actually discovered a new tool out of it. It's called the Shrunks, where, you know, you can sleep in the same bed, but it's like a little rail. That way I won't roll over on the baby when I'm traveling.
Honey, I shrunk the kids.
Yeah. So
it's the shrunk.
It's a really cool service. So it's not for everybody, but, you know, you can get a car seat for $10 a day, a height chair of $6.
You should have asked the waitress.
We can do it.
Can I put ketchup on my seafood pasta? Would that be okay? Mustard, pickle relish?
I was, I was shocked when we asked to split the bill, if they would split the bill, because there were three different couples. And they
said,
okay.
They said, okay.
They said, okay. And I was like, okay.
It's like this soup Nazi. Johnny Jett is at johnnyjett.com. That's his website. Follow him on Instagram and Twitter at Johnny Jett, because you get great travel photos and lots of travel tips. And, of course, his newsletters are free and must subscribe. johnnyjett.com. Thanks, John.
Thank you.
Safe travels. That's fun. No, I see. I didn't know. Here I am all my life. I've been putting cheese on seafood pasta.
Okay, yeah, my dad, because I was like, my dad would be like,
why not cheese?
I have no idea, because I actually don't like seafood pasta. And there's only,
yeah, that's true. I rarely order it.
But I was shocked when they said, sorry, the chef won't allow us to do it. He's Italian. I go, I'm Italian.
He gets angry. You know, yeah. What? He'll walk out, and then and you really have a problem. So you got to be nice to the chef.
But the food there is really good. I mean, it is.
You put cheese on a tuna melt.
Yes, I'm going to rip them in the post, but you know.
What was the name of that restaurant?
Terroni, Terroni.
Sounds
there's three
Italian.
In Toronto and one in LA.
Yeah, sounds very Italian. I'm telling you, Barbarians.
It's
and,
great.
And Aaron is a really sweet guy. He's the son of the guy who started it. They've been there since 1959. Food in Toronto's great, yeah. I love Toronto. I miss it a little bit.
I'm about to go get some Italian food right now.
Have some poutine while you're there.
Don't you worry. You know, McDonald's here has poutine. Popeyes. There's a Popeyes near Natalie's, too. And I walk by, they have a big sign, poutine, Cajun poutine.
Everywhere they got it. Yeah, it's disgusting.
So, yeah.
Thank you. Just don't tell him I said so. Thank you, John. Have a great time.
Take care.
You Take
too.
Care.
Bye-bye.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. We got a couple of lines open. It'd be a good time to call. Everybody's too hot to call. Oh, it's too hot to pick up the phone. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. We got Brian on the line from Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, Brian.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm well, how are you?
I am hanging in like a hair in a biscuit.
I love these country colloquialisms. That's
we
good.
We have plenty of them here.
Yes, yes, you do, and I love them. I got to write that one down. Hair in a biscuit, all right. What can I do for you?
Well, several things. One, you had mentioned to let you know some things that I tried. You were interested.
Always want to know if something worked or didn't work, yeah.
Yeah, well, I went with AirMail 3. I was talking to you about.
Oh, yes, I remember. We were talking about different. Was it for iOS?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, no, it was for Mac.
Mac. We were looking for Macintosh, good Macintosh mail programs to replace Apple's own mail program.
Yeah.
AirMail 3 is pretty nice, pretty sweet.
Yeah. The only downfall with it that I really thought it was going to have, and it didn't, and I still can't find one that has it. They only do it for Gmail, I guess, because Gmail allows it. Is I'm a big tagger. I like to tag things.
Yeah.
Photos. Yeah, and they still, by the way, they still don't tag photos on your phone, your iPhone. You can't tag a photo. It bugs me to death because it's hard to go find photos you've taken.
Interesting. So if you're in Photos, the Apple Photo app, you can't just add random tags to
no. You can't say tag. You can do a heart where you say it.
Yeah, favorite it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. And then go look through your favorites. But anyway, I'm a big tag user on the Mac side of things.
That is a missing piece. I agree with you on that. Yeah.
But in AirMail 3, I was hoping you could tag emails, but you can't. So I'll keep looking. But anyway, I still like AirMail 3 better than I do Mac's mail.
We call that taxonomy. Which is the idea that adding tags helps you find stuff. Because images in particular, you've got no text. So having some tags in there helps you narrow it down. It's called taxonomy. And when you are allowed to create your own tags, sometimes they call that folksonomy because the folks are doing it. It was, I think it first started with Flickr, is in my memory.
It would get more folksy.
We need to get more folksonomy in the email. Email, it's less important because there's two other ways you can do this. You know, Gmail has labels, which look like folders, right? So if you add labels to the email, that actually puts them in folders. So you could, on AirMail, create folders and filters that would filter them into folders. problem is...
Yes. By the way, that's what their support always told me. He says, well, just make folders. And I said, I don't want to make
folders. I don't
want
to make
those are extra steps.
I want tags.
I just want to right-click and tag. But
I am sure there's email programs on the Mac that'll let you do tagging.
I haven't found it. If someone knows of it, I hope they put it in the on the IRC, but I'll...
So but, I use an email.
I've seen you have to buy a program.
When we talked about this last, I mentioned a program I use called MailMate, which is kind of a power tool for email. It's kind of almost old school, and I'm pretty sure, yeah, MailMate has tags.
Yeah, there was one program I looked at, but it was very rough and very.
You could call it rough.
I'm a sysadmin.
Oh, you would like MailMate then. MailMate is like a power tool.
I know. I thought of that, but I don't know. I just... Anyway, the main reason I'm calling... by the way, LastPass, I settled on it.
Good man. Good choice. That's a password manager.
I dropped Spider Oak, and I'm going with a new one that I'm really loving as far as encrypted files, and that is Trezorit. I'm finding it incredible.
Not familiar with that. I've known Spider Oak for a long time, but I didn't like the fact that they use Java for that. So,
well, not only that, they're very kludgy and
that makes
very intuitive.
Yeah. So Trezorit.
Yeah. It's French for something. I don't know what.
Trésor is treasure.
Ah, oh, there we go.
So there is your treasure. I've stole my treasure. It's my secret treasure.
Yeah.
So this is good. This is what we call zero knowledge, and this is what some people are looking for. Dropbox, OneDrive, Amazon's iCloud are not what we call zero knowledge because in those respects, Dropbox, Microsoft, and Apple all have access to your data. In other words, the key is not held by you, but it's held by those companies. And they do that because it gives you, there's a lot of convenience factors involved, but it is not a privacy. It's not in your favor for privacy. So if something is zero knowledge, it means that only you can unencrypt a file that you've stored on their servers, which means they can't give it to law enforcement. They can't snoop on it. It's really a great idea, but it does limit the kinds of things you can do with the service. So you have to decide.
The other nice thing about Trezorit is it does do the exact uses the exact same method as iCloud Drive. Trezorit lets you make a drive, and it syncs across all your devices. You create a Trezorit drive. I don't need this for backups. I have plenty of things in place for backups. I have a certain set of files and folders that I want those encrypted and taken care of, and I use the Trezorit drive for that. And it syncs across all my devices, and the key is it's zero knowledge. And their servers are all overseas.
The only thing, the one red flag on Trezorit, and I'd love you to look into this, is they say they have a patented encryption technology, which means it's proprietary. And that always makes me nervous because, well, it's hard to write crypto. And I generally say if you're going to use crypto, use open source crypto that's been vetted.
I would agree with that, too.
Yeah. So so when they say patented, that worries me. I see it, and I don't know what that means. They use use PKI, which is open for authentication, which is good. But I don't know if they use public key cryptography or their own special cryptography. They may be doing that so that they can add some features that public key crypto won't let you do with a file sharing system. So I don't
know. Which, you know as well as I do, might cause some open doors and some zero what do you call it?
Zero days.
Zero day.
Yeah. So I'm always nervous. It always makes me nervous when I see patented cryptography. It's like, oh, you mean you own this and you made it up? I don't know. Anyway, I'll mention that.
Here's my main question. Here's what I'm interested in. Having some issues with my arm. This is from a trip I made to Maine and back. And what they're saying it was caused by is having your arm lean on the door while you're driving.
Yeah.
So what it's done, and it hasn't gone away. We're now at 2 months. It hasn't gone away. So what it does is that your that nerve that goes through a notch in your elbow.
Yeah.
It causes your two fingers, your ring finger and your pinky, to be just numb. They're gone.
Yeah.
So it is totally ruining my typing, and I'm an IT guy. I work.
Oh, that's not
10
good.
Hours a day behind a keyboard. Taking care of hospital systems, and it dawned on me, you know what? I've always wanted to look at that and try it because I have the Echo. I have all
You want to you want to dictate instead of type.
Well, not only dictate, what I would love to do, because if you know anything about sysadmins, 90% of the things we do are the same things just over and
automated.
Over and over. So we do a lot of scripts, a lot of automation. But it, unfortunately, even though I have a Mac, my job is in Windows, so I run Parallels with Windows in it.
I know a sysadmin whose philosophy is if something takes more than 30 seconds, he's going to write a script to automate it. He even has a script to send his wife flowers.
Or remind him to send his wife.
At least remind him.
I've always wanted to, like I said, I have the Echo Show now, one in the kitchen. Oh, I haven't even touched probably half of what it uses.
Oh, yeah, it's amazing. It's got 15,000 skills now, so you could write your own easily.
Yeah, but what I want to start trying to do is the audio is some sort of audio commands. I'd love to do more where instead of, but dictation would is probably the biggest thing. And I noticed the Mac, you can turn on enhanced dictation and use a command that you like on mine, except for hitting or the right command twice. And you can start dictating.
You hit function key twice. So the issue on this is general purpose dictation is not going to do well for the stuff you want because you're going to be using specialized, you're going to use Unix commands and things like that, and it won't know how to type those at all. But the good news in that regard is specialized vocabularies actually are the best for dictation. What you're going to need to find, and you're not going to be able to use Echo Sorry, I wasn't talking to you. You're not going to be able to use Mac or Windows built-in dictation because those are for...
I'm not sure about that.
I know. You're not sure about anything, you dumb bunny. I'm just going to... No, I don't want to shut you... Anyway, look for a dictation system like Dragon Dictate that has a specialized vocabulary for sysadmins because then you would get high accuracy. You're not going to get good accuracy with a Mac. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So you're going to say, if you're going to say, you know, computer, run rm-rf/*, it's not going to understand that. It's because it's not English.
Yeah.
Is that the kind of thing you want to dictate?
Along the lines of start programs. Just start programs.
Well, but if, okay, start's fine. But
emails.
As soon as you say, you know, bind demon... It's not going to know what the hell you're talking about. Bindy. I want to start Bindy. What do you mean Bindy? But on the other hand, for instance, radiologists now almost universally use automated dictation while they're reading a X-ray because it's such a constrained vocabulary. So he looks at you. He says, "Well, we've got inflammation in the ulnar nerve." It knows what the ulnar nerve is because it's a medical vocabulary. It's a radiologist's vocabulary.
By the way, interesting story on that. Real quick, I'll make it real quick. That caused a big stink. Like I told you, I'm a sysadmin for hospitals. It used to be that the dictation girls, and I call them girls. They were all girls for some reason, but the dictationists, whatever you call it,
are they 12?
No, transcriptionists. They're all ladies. I'm sorry. I'm just digging a deep.
You're an old man.
I know.
Hey, girls, I got something to transcribe, girls.
Yeah, the transcription.
I'm 48 years old. I'm not a girl.
They used to be all transcriptionists, and all they did was listen to the recording of what the doctor said.
Right.
And they typed out everything. Well, now they're editors.
Yeah, because.
Systems now.
Right.
The system automatically takes what he says.
Does a very good job.
Puts in a thing.
Yeah.
And now the transcriptionist just sits there, who's now an editor, just sits there and reads it and listens
and checks.
And fixes what it didn't do.
Yeah. And it's getting better and better. A constrained vocabulary is great.
Yeah, that's great when you had 6 transcriptionists, though, and they came in and said 4 of you are fired. We only need 2 now.
Welcome to the modern world. There's a lot of jobs that don't exist anymore.
I know. That just
and frankly, those 4 who still have a job won't have much of a job soon.
Yeah.
That's just.
But it was overnight. It literally, we changed systems. It was overnight. All of a sudden, they weren't typing. I mean, they weren't typing anymore. They were editing. It was interesting. But anyway.
Well, let me just look and see if anybody offers a sysadmin vocabulary, because that would be a really useful. And I'm sure they told you it'll get better if you don't use it, right?
Well, the problem is, how do you not use your hand?
I know. That's the problem, is right.
And how do you not lean on your elbow? I mean, it's like, it's all you do.
Yeah. Dragon naturally speaking. Oh, by the way, it's Sysadmin Day, isn't it?
Is it?
I think it was. Maybe it's over. Let me check. Happy Sysadmin Day.
Well, thank you.
I'm just looking to see if Dragon offers, you know, they offer all these specialized vocabularies. If you could get one, a Sysadmin vocabulary, you would totally be able to do what you want to do. But if not, your problem is going to be that you say start, that's fine. But then when you say, you know, whatever, HTTPD, it's going to be, I guess you could spell it, but then it might put spaces in. And, you know, it's just, I guess you could train it. You could train it.
Yeah.
It's probably a very.
The biggest thing for me will be dictation, where I'd spend a lot of time in emails where I just dictate and you don't have to type. Because I'm noticing when these fingers are numb, I'm spending so much time fixing what I type because you can't feel.
Right.
It's just a mess.
I am so sorry. Can they give you a brace or?
Oh, well, the nice thing is they've tried me two regimens on some medication that was supposed to help. It didn't. They said literally the worst case scenario, there's a 15-minute surgery where they go in and fix it, and you're good to go.
Yeah.
I'm just surgery.
My wife had that. So she had the classic carpal tunnel issue where it's in the wrist. Same idea, though, that the nerve in the bone in the wrist is getting inflamed because of contact with the bone. And they did a little surgery, and it fixed it.
Yep. They said it was 15 minutes. It's same-day surgery. You go home that day and...
Might be worth it.
I was so hoping the medication was going to work. It was, but it didn't.
I'm sorry.
That's all right.
It's great.
It's ice cream day.
It's ice cream day, but as you see in the chat room, a week from Friday is Sysadmin Day. So put on a fancy dress and celebrate.
Yeah, that'll.
Nothing like a hairy guy in a dress. I'll tell you, that just it's a look. Hey, it's great to talk to you. I appreciate it. I'm sorry about the injury. But and take a look at MailMate, because it does the tagging that you want to do. It's very powerful that way.
And MailMate.
And since you're a sysadmin, you know, Claws, which is a universal open source, I think Claws, let me just see. Claws Mail probably does, because it's open source. And that's available on Linux, Mac, and Windows.
I didn't hear that one. How do you spell Claws?
claws-mail.org. I would look and see if it supports it. But it's another one of those, you know, geeky email programs. It's a step up from Pine and Mutt.
That's not a big step.
It's not a big... I wouldn't be surprised if it does tags, because MailMate does tags and it's great. MailMate is amazing.
Well, the support people said, just keep making folders. Just make folders.
And yeah, but the problem with the folder is it's one tag. So you categorize that email in a folder. Now, that's one tag. That's why Google did labels, not folders, because it doesn't actually move the mail. It just labels it, and it shows up in a folder, but you can have multiple
labels. Which is why AirMail 3 works with the Google Mail, because when you're tagging it in AirMail 3, it's actually doing the label behind it on Gmail.
Right.
I think.
Yes, it is. Absolutely. Gmail is fake IMAP because of this labels. That's the biggest difference. A real IMAP program actually is using folders, but Gmail just uses its labels, and so it kind of confuses IMAP programs. But it's so dominant that everybody works with it.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, sir, I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Take care.
Thank you.
See you. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smart watches and all that jazz. 8888. Ask Leo. Normally, Chris Marquardt, our digital photography guru, would be here at 9:30 today, but he is traveling, and we've got a great fill-in all the way from Hawaii, Anthony Tortorelli, who is our world-famous Hawaiian wildlife photographer, will be joining us with some tips. That'll be in about 30 minutes from right now. Phone number, if you want to call in and join us and ask a question, make a comment, make a suggestion, is 888 Ask Leo, 888-827-5536. And the website where I put all the links and all the answers and everything you need to know, even audio and video after the fact, is techguylabs.com. Make a note of that. That's all you really need to remember. Everything ends up there. techguylabs.com. Marty, Los Angeles, you're next. Hi, Marty.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Okay. Well, I have a question for you, which kind of relates to a prior caller. You mentioned that going overseas, using your phone, if you make a mistake, it could cost you somewhere in the world of $2,000.
Yeah. I mentioned, we were talking earlier, 10 grand if you do it on a plane. One per gigabyte. It's amazing.
Oh, gosh. So after I fainted, my wife revived me. She did the first thing.
But nobody should be paying that because there's other ways around it, you know. But when the iPhone first came out in 2007, I would get calls from people who said, I just got back from Europe and it was in a $4,000 bill. And the reason is the iPhone, even if you didn't use data, you know, overtly surf the web or whatever, is always going out and getting mail and checking things. And it would just in the background use a ton of data. And, of course, it's very costly. So that's right. Why I always say when you travel, unless you've made arrangements for data, turn off data roaming.
Yeah, that actually was what I was going to ask you, because we were planning on using the WhatsApp application.
Which is great. That's like texting, but it uses data. So
okay. Well, the data, my normal data, I have plenty of data, so that's not a problem.
Well, but overseas, you don't have plenty of data.
Yes. Okay.
That's the difference. So this is really important. I heard your wife in the background saying airplane mode. You don't need to do airplane mode because that turns off everything. That turns your phone, your smartphone, into a dumb phone. All you need to do is go in the cellular settings on your phone and turn off data roaming. That's the permission that says, and you know, nowadays they've, in many cases, it's off by default. That's the permission that says, yeah, when I'm out of the country, I don't care. I get data wherever you can get it, however expensive it might be. And again, if you haven't made prior arrangements, it's expensive. So right. Turning off data roaming will protect you from that. Then you can use GPS, still works. What'll happen, though, let's say you open Google Maps or Apple Maps and you've turned off data roaming. You'll know where you are, but you won't be able to download the map. The good news is, nowadays, everyone has Wi-Fi. When you're at a hotel, there's going to be Wi-Fi. When you're in a coffee shop, there's going to be Wi-Fi. No matter where you go now, Wi-Fi is ubiquitous. What you can do with Google Maps is say, look, I'm going to be hanging out in Paris. Download all the maps for Paris while you're at the hotel on Wi-Fi and keep them offline. Now, turn off, you know, data roaming's turned off, so you go out of the hotel, you're going to lose Wi-Fi, you're not going to have any data, but those maps will work because GPS still works. So that's why airplane mode is not the solution, because that turns off everything. You want to leave everything, including phone calls. So,
in other words, leave airplane mode on.
No, turn off. You don't want airplane mode. That's just for the airplane. All you want to do is turn off data roaming.
Just turn off data roaming.
Everything else will operate fine, including, see, if you use airplane mode and you're in the hotel, Wi-Fi won't work. You want Wi-Fi to work. Wi-Fi is harmless.
Right, right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. So, and then I'll be able to talk and text or just text?
Well, texting is another matter, too, because the phone companies they're looking for every way to make a buck off of you. So they often will charge a lot of money for international texting. Who's your phone company?
Verizon.
Okay. Yeah, love them. However, Verizon, they're the worst for international travel, but they've gotten better thanks to competition. But you call them and you say, look, I'm going – what countries are you going to?
Going to Finland, Lithuania, Iceland, and the Czech Republic. My wife and son, they're going, and I'm going to be in the States.
You want to talk to them. So when they're in the hotel, WhatsApp, no problem. It's free. Because they're using the hotel's Wi-Fi. But the minute they step out of the hotel, as long as they've turned off data roaming, WhatsApp is going to stop working. However, that's okay, because when they get back to the hotel, all the messages you sent them will flood in.
Right, okay.
Now, if they're going over to those countries, it's, you know, one of the problems with that is each country has its own cell service. In the EU, they've made rules that say you can buy a card from any EU country and go to any other EU country, but not all those countries are in the EU. So getting a SIM card is going to be a pain. What you're going to want them to do is get an international data plan from Verizon. And they'll tell you, you know, how much data you can use and how much texting you can do. And so,
right.
So that's I would definitely do that before they leave. How long are they going to be gone for? That sounds like a long trip.
About 3 weeks.
Yeah. My memory of Verizon is that they sell you a bundle of data, not very much either, and then you buy more as you need it. But I don't know what they do, but text messages. So be very careful, because text messages and text, the three things that call you, that cost you when you travel, are text messages, phone calls, and cellular data.
Right.
And so before you go, you want to know what the costs are going to be. Even with some of these international plans, a phone call might be $2 a minute. So you don't want to make outbound phone calls, you know, but you want that phone number in case there's an emergency, you can reach them and they can reach you. Yeah. But they understand, look, the longer we talk, the more it's like the old days. Remember when long distance, you'd say, I'm on long distance, let's make this quick. It's going to be like that, $2 a minute. Texting might cost a lot. So don't just assume that you can text. I like your WhatsApp idea, but remember, WhatsApp uses data. And once you leave the Wi-Fi area at your hotel or a coffee shop, you're not going to be able to use it unless you pay for data.
So as long as I have Wi-Fi available to me, then I'm okay for both.
For data. You're not okay for phone calls. You're still paying extra for phone calls and text messaging.
Oh, okay.
So encourage them to use WhatsApp, not text messages. And I tell you what, this is hard with kids because they text message like crazy, right? And they're going to want to type to their friends. And you got to tell them, unless you've made a plan, call Verizon, find out. It might be 50 cents a message.
Right. I see.
That could cost you $20 or $30 a day all of a sudden that you didn't count on. Or more. I've seen kids send hundreds of messages in one day.
Oh, my.
Oh, my.
I think I just fainted again.
Well, the key is to call Verizon. The other thing you want to make sure is that your phones will work overseas. Verizon, some of the older Verizon phones are not international phones. So you can ask them. You can say, now, if you have what are they, iPhones?
No, they're not. One is a Note 4. They're not the latest phone. The phones going overseas are Samsung Note 4.
You better call Verizon. I think those may not work at all overseas.
Okay. All right. I'll have to Great. I'm glad I called.
This can really sting you. I'm glad you realized that, and now you know where the costs come from. They call from phone calls, texting, and international data roaming. Turn off data roaming, you've saved one, but you haven't solved the calls and texts problem. So you got to make some arrangements, because especially teenagers, they're going to text like crazy. That's why WhatsApp is a good choice, or Facebook Messenger, or any data based messenger is going to be a better idea. Dr. Mom used her Note 4 overseas. She said it worked. Is it a Verizon Note 4, Dr. Mom? Because Verizon uses a CDMA. And at some point, the phone started using LTE, which means they would work overseas. Maybe the Note 4 is one of them. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Not all the notes. No, so you're saying... you got to understand,
this
Dr.
Year,
Mom.
Thousands of victims are going to.
It's different for a Verizon Note 4. Okay, Verizon says it will. All right. Your AT&T will. Any AT&T phone will work fine overseas. Thank you, Mike B. I almost did. Hey, our show today brought to you by my blog platform. Actually, it's my website platform. You're a web developer. You've heard of WordPress, perhaps. 28% of all the sites in the world run on WordPress, including some of the biggest publications in the world. WordPress.com. Let me show you my website. I'm so proud of it. WordPress.com. I moved it over. It was easy to move it over from that other site. I'll tell you why. Because WordPress is basically, they've been around so long, they're so well known, that they're practically standard. So everywhere will let you export your data to WordPress.com. I'm going to LeoLaporte.com. That's my website. It's a beautiful site running on WordPress. By the way, I had a question. I said, look, I want to have big front page images on my front page of my website. How do you do that? I called them up. They're great support. They said, oh, yeah, yeah, here's a template for you. 2017. I just love it. Notice on the right, I've got all the links and the social media links, but also it imports my tweets. It imports my my Instagram images. It's really a easy way to make a website. WordPress.com. It also is the nice thing about WordPress is they keep it up to date for you automatically. And it's a community. When you go to WordPress.com, there's millions of people using WordPress.com so that you're part of that community. You're on the front page. You're going to get lots of traffic generated. Hundreds of themes. You pick a template. You make it your own. They've got plans for all kinds of users, for bloggers all the way up to big businesses. You know, some of the biggest websites like Quartz.com is running on WordPress. I remember when Quartz came out, everybody said, oh, this is state-of-the-art web design, the latest, greatest, newest thing. It was WordPress. It was kind of funny. Search engine optimization built in. As I showed you, social sharing is built in. Well, actually, if somebody likes, wants to take my blog post and share it on Facebook or Twitter or Google, it's easy to do. And it just is so much easier and so much more fun that I post more, which I kind of didn't expect that. I actually put more stuff up there because it's kind of more fun. Whether you're looking to create a personal blog, a business site, or both, make a big impact and make it easy on yourself. Create your next website at WordPress.com. Go to WordPress.com/techguy and you'll save 15% off any new plan purchase. 15% off at WordPress.com/techguy. And we thank WordPress for their support. I love it because I figured out how to do all the, like for instance, what I decided to do is do excerpts at the top. But then if you say I want to read more, you know, you can embed images. And then I figured out how to do a slideshow from SmugMug, and so I have all my images in a slideshow here, which is awesome. I'm loving it. I'm loving it. WordPress.com/ Tech Guy. Take a look at my blog, leolaporte.com, for a sample of what you can do. And we thank them for their support, making the Tech Guy podcast possible. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Coming up, we're going to talk photography with Anthony Tortorelli. Before we do that, let's go to Boston. Ron is on the line. Hi, Ron.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. Welcome to the show.
Good. Thank you for having me. I appreciate you taking my call.
Oh, my pleasure.
I have an Echo in my kitchen, and I have Echoes in my kids' bedrooms upstairs. I have an Echo in the bathroom upstairs. I can't get it to call anybody.
The intercom solution.
I'm yelling up the stairs.
Yeah, it's awesome. So you can use it as an intercom, and the command is drop in. So, drop in. So, you should go into the app, though, and make sure drop in is enabled on the Echoes that you want to drop in on. And then it's got control over who can drop in. I have it set only people in my household can drop in. That way, nobody, you know, who knows the name of my Echo can just drop in on me. Drop in is different than calling. Echo will also call other Echoes. So, I can say, you know, Echo, call Leo Laporte. And it will call me.
Leo Laporte, right?
Yeah. See what I'm saying? Right. And my phone will, not my phone will ring, but my other Echo will ring. In fact, what it's going to do now is give me a listing of all of Leo Laporte's Echoes. And I can choose the Echo, because Echo only has Echo-to-Echo calling. But the difference in calling is...
Sorry, something went wrong.
Yeah, I know. I kept talking. The difference with calling is that the other person has to pick up. Drop in... It goes bloop in the other Echo, and you just start talking. So I use it to wake my kid up. Of course, he figured that out, and he now unplugs his Echo.
Oh, that's nice.
Well, let me just – I think it's still unplugged. Let me see. Echo. Echo. Drop in on Michael.
Michael is unavailable.
Yeah, he unplugged it. So it needs the cooperation of both ends. But I like that because I don't want to have to shout all over the house now. So I can't.
Right, because it's making me crazy. Yeah. Getting a headache.
Yeah. Echo, drop in on bedroom.
Sorry, I didn't find bedroom.
Oh. What did I call it? Anyway, you can drop in on all the echoes in your household. If you want, you can drop in on other people's echoes. So you can go as far as anybody who is in your contact list and their phone number is associated with an echo. You can drop in.
That was another question I had for you.
Yeah,
my contact list will not sync with my echo. It sank. That I don't even want to talk to. People I want to talk to is not thinking.
All of this can be handled in the Echo app. Scooter's reminding me, before you can use drop-in, you have to sign up for Echo calling and messaging and then enable drop-in for yourself or a contact. But you do all of that in the app. Same thing with the contact list. You have to associate. Is your contact list on Google?
No, it's on my iPhone.
Okay, so the first thing I would do is sync your iPhone list to Google, which you can do in the iPhone, and then you can add your Google contacts to the Echo. You have to log into your Google account in the Echo app, and then it will add them.
Yeah,
and it might take a little while. It doesn't do it all at once. It slowly pieces out and gets it.
Because if I had here, I would have pulled it out by now. Trust me. this is making me crazy.
I like it. I really like it. Echo, drop in on Leo's office. Let me see if I can do that. So it makes a little sound in Leo's office, like bloop, like that. And then now it hears me. Now nobody's in my office right now. This is my home office. In effect, talking to my home office. I also see a slightly blurry picture of my home office. Oops, which just resolved. So this is the negative of drop-in. Without permission, you're going to get to see a picture. So, you got to only do this with people you know and like.
Take my contact list and download it onto Google.
That's what I would do. And then associate your Google account with your Echo account. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll do that.
I don't know if it works with iCloud. I think you have to do it with Google. And I'm just talking to myself in an empty office here. Echo, stop. So I love that feature because because we have so many Echoes, it sounds like you do too, we have an intercom system in our house all of a sudden.
Right. Everything with this Echo is fantastic.
I know.
I just can't do this part of it, and it's making me crazy.
Yeah, because everybody's talking about
it. It's a great invention. I mean, but like you said, I don't know where if someone's on the TV, they say the name and bloop, stop.
So do you have the Echo app on your iPhone?
I do.
So it will look at your iPhone contacts. I wonder if you've got to give it permission, though, and maybe when you first set up the app, you didn't give it permission or didn't ask for it. Go into settings for that app. It's not called Echo. It's called the A word, you know. But go into settings for the app and make sure that it has permission to access your contacts. If it does, it can pull it from that as well. You don't have to go to Google. It can pull it from that as well. And then it will see, you can't call every contact. It has to be a contact associated with an Echo. And I think it does that by phone number.
Okay.
All right.
We're good.
Have fun.
Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it. I will. Thank you, Leo.
It's a funny device because we were talking at the beginning of the hour about, beginning of the show about Jeff Bezos and Amazon and their stealthy kind of swallowing of the world. I feel like at this point, there's a few players that are really in position to be totally dominant. And Amazon, absolutely one of them. Google is one of them. And Google's placing a lot of bets in a lot of interesting situations. Google and Amazon seem to have the lead in what we call artificial intelligence or machine learning. They have the data, and they're able to chomp on that data to start making it useful to you in interesting ways. For instance, if you upload your pictures to Amazon Prime or to Google Photos, they'll categorize them. You can search Google Photos for dog pictures, and it knows what a dog looks like. It'll give you all your pictures of dogs. This is starting to become more and more useful. The Echo is really Amazon's, I think, reach out to get more data from all of us, to understand better what we're looking for, what we want, how we want to interact, what kinds of things we do. The more of that data they have, and it's not, you know, it's a little, maybe people feel it's a little intrusive. The amount of data that the more data they can get, the more useful they can be to you. But you're opting in. And so you don't have to, and I know a lot of people will not have an Echo in the house. It's always listening. I don't want to have that in the house. For me, the utility of it way outweighs any imaginary privacy violation. Microsoft, I would put on the list, too, of companies that are kind of in a position to change the world. Yeah, it's surprising that Microsoft's still in that position, but they've reinvented that company, and they've started to do some things that are quite impressive. Very smart people there. I don't think they're I would count them out. Facebook is probably in there. We call them the five horsemen of the internet. Facebook, Google, Amazon, Microsoft, and Apple. I'm not sure about Apple and Facebook, though. I think they're a little bit behind. Apple, because it doesn't want to gather data on you. Well, that really makes it less useful. And Facebook, because, well, they seem a little weird. their culture is a little strange. And I don't think that they have broadened their reach in any interesting or significant way. So my money would be on Amazon, Microsoft, and Google. And Amazon, in some significant ways. Look at the love people have for that Echo, right? 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So that surprised me. I didn't know that I could turn the camera on from this end. Echo, drop in on Leo's office. Oh, yeah, much better than Google Home. So initially the picture's blurry. And I thought, I was wrong apparently, that I had to give permission on that end to see the picture. But look, it resolves itself. Huh?
Can you see Anthony?
Yes.
Want to make sure.
Where is he?
He's on
Skype. Hi, Anthony.
Hello, Leo. How are you?
I am great. Tortorelli, am I saying that right?
No, but it's all right. Tortorello.
Tortorello.
Or Tortorello.
There's only one of the Tortorellos.
Yeah, probably. Good thing.
And what do you want to talk about today?
I don't know. It's up to you. Kind of last minute, obviously.
I appreciate that.
No, all good. Easy.
Let's see.
Does the audio sound all right?
Audio's great. Picture's great.
Oh, okay, cool.
What do you shoot with these days?
I shoot with the Nikon D500 as my primary camera. I'm waiting to see what the 810 replacement is going to be, and I'll probably buy that.
Yeah, I love that.
Or an A9. I don't know. The A9
The A9 is the same. Actually, it's a better sensor than the 810, right?
Yeah, I mean, it has a lot of frame rate. It has silent shutter, a lot of innovative features. So.
But the dynamic range, I'm told, is not as broad as the A7 R2.
Yeah, I owned an A7 R2, and I really enjoyed it. I used it in the water. I used it out of the water. I shot a lot of 4K video with it. It's a good camera. And contemplating buying another one of those, so who knows.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Normally, Chris Marquardt would be joining us at this hour, but Chris is out of town. So I thought I'd go out of town all the way to Hawaii to say hello to one of our great friends. He's a regular in our chat room. We call him A-Tort in the chat room. Anthony Tortoriello, atortphotography.com. Aloha, Anthony. Where in Hawaii do you live? Remind me.
Aloha, Leo. I am on the north shore of beautiful Oahu.
You like it there?
Yeah, it's nice.
I bet it's a photographer's dream.
It is. Yeah. I mean, there's always beauty. It's almost ADD. You get so much distracting beauty. I mean, but that's obviously a good thing.
So
right now I have an earache, but that's due to being in the water.
You spend a lot of time in the water.
Yeah.
Do you do underwater photography?
A lot of water photography. Yeah. It's kind of par for the course being surrounded by the ocean.
What do you like? We were going to talk about iPhone accessories and we will get to that in a second. But I'm just curious. What do you, so you use a housing for your Nikon, your big Nikon camera?
Yeah, whatever. You know, when I had my Sony, you use certain housings for that, too. I mean, I had an Aquatech housing for that.
It seals the water out, and then it has buttons on it that you can use to press.
Yeah, you can. Some people opt to get no buttons, just depending on what you're shooting. People who shoot some of the waves or go out to surf, they don't want to mess around with all the buttons or possibly miss, you know, like have something not
right
working the right way. So, you know, when you're diving, you probably want more full control and functionality so you can make settings and fine-tune adjustments.
Are there any cameras that are just waterproof you could just take with you?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, you can have GoPro. You can even put your iPhone into a housing if you like. Watershot makes one that's really nice.
Tell me about this. So we were going to talk about iPhone photography. Anthony, one of his claims to fame is that one of his beautiful iPhone shots actually became part of Apple's Shot on iPhone campaign. It's a sea turtle, I think.
Yeah, it was a sea turtle, a Hawaiian green sea turtle.
Just gorgeous. Yeah.
Been working with them still on some other stuff, and I actually just have the housing coming for the iPhone 7 Plus, which has been a long, you know, been waiting for a while for that. So hopefully, get some
now,
content for them again.
Doesn't Apple say the iPhone 7 is waterproof?
Yeah, water resistant.
You wouldn't want to shoot with it underwater.
No, especially in the salt water in Hawaii, it's way too intense.
So if you wanted to do that, tell me about the housing. What housing would you? I mean, I've put it in a sealed dry bag, and take pictures with that.
That's the thing. I mean, those are, you know, and a lot of people are really hesitant to take their iPhones because they're either everything into the water, but the housing that I use is a Watershot housing, and it's a proper housing, so it actually seals legitimately like, you know, a housing should if you're taking your... So, yeah, they actually just came out with one for the 7 Plus, and it's going to have the ability to take advantage of their dual lens system, so you can actually... use both of the lenses while in the water, which is super cool. And I'm really excited. And they're just kind of finishing the tooling and the testing. So I should have one hopefully in the next week.
The nice thing about the Watershot is it makes an iPhone not much bigger than a point-and-shoot camera. Sometimes these housings can be gigantic.
Yeah, and I mean, the bottom line is it's fun. I mean, I have my housing. You know, the dive housings are huge and heavy. And even the ones that you use for the surf are heavier, and you know, you have more of a commitment. The phone is just, it's fun. You have fun when you go in and you have the content right there on your phone ready to go.
You can edit different
apps and share right away. It's really cool.
You're wearing a GorillaPod t-shirt, so I'm figuring you use GorillaPods.
Yeah, you know, at the Joby, I'm an ambassador for them, so I use a lot of their products. But yeah, I mean, if you see in the back, they have that Joby Focus that I use a lot for the iPhone photography.
So these are crazy tripods because they have like, they call them GorillaPods. The legs are, you can bend them. They're bendy.
Yeah, they're flexible. You know, you can wrap it around the pole, a tree, branch, whatever you'd want.
I have a bunch of them. I love them. They're not expensive. They're not as stable as a regular camera tripod. And I guess for your DSLR, you'd have to have a pretty heavy-duty one.
Actually, that Joby Focus back there, I put my Nikon D500 with the 2-500 lens, that lens
what?
That you see in the background.
Yeah. Yeah, so move your head to the left, not to the right. I see it.
There you go.
Yeah. And that big camera, you put that on that thing?
Yeah, you can. I mean, you know, you have to watch over it a little bit. But I was shooting surf video, and I wrapped it around the lifeguard tower, you know, like railing that they had. And it was fine. It stayed stable. I mean, you know, of course, I kept an extra eye because I was kind of pushing the weight limit. But
it was fine. One of Joby's tripods that I really like, they call it the GripTight 1. Mount,
yep.
And that is designed for a phone. That'll work with any camera phone. The GripTight is kind of like, I don't know, it's kind of like pliers or something. It just holds the phone in its two little arms.
Yeah, and that's super affordable, easy. You can keep it in your glove compartment, whatever. I mean, keep it in your wallet.
It folds up, so it's very flat. And then I attach that to one of the Joby's really interesting little tripods. It's a smaller one because you don't need a big one for an iPhone, called the... Magnetic Impulse. It has magnetic little red magnetic feet, so they will just get into, they're good magnets. They'll grip on any metal surface, and then as you do, I can wrap it around a railing or a rock.
Now that one has a remote attached to it too, so you can even fire.
It's a great selfie cam.
Yeah.
It's got a little Bluetooth remote that'll fire the camera. Yeah, I carry this in my briefcase. Just waiting for the day somebody will want me to take a picture.
Yeah.
What else do you use? We've got a waterproof case. We've got a mount. Do you ever use any of those lenses that you add to the iPhone to give them more capability?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've used everything. I mean, Oloclip is nice, too. I mean, but I've been using more of the Moment lenses. So they have a really beautiful system. Yeah, that I think it's just a nicer quality glass. I mean, unfortunately, you know, than Oloclip.
More glass costs money, though, right? Better glass?
Yeah, it does. But again, you know, I mean, I'm pretty serious about it. But it is, you know, you don't have to buy all of them. You can buy one lens. Like, you can buy, they have a wide, they have a super fish, it's called, which is a really wide lens. But what I like is it doesn't fall soft on the edges, and it actually is a really nice piece of glass. And again, you never know too with the iPhone. I mean, you know, who knows? Maybe you get an Apple ad out of it and get paid. I mean, so
yeah, that Apple ad must have been a big boost to your career. That's awesome.
It helps. Awesome. Yeah.
They're not hugely expensive. I see one telephoto lens for $59.99.
Yeah, they have a macro. They have a little telephoto. I mean, if I was doing one, I'd probably do the wider, the superfish. I mean, it's really amazing. It's a great piece of glass. And you know, it's great with a 7 Plus. You could actually have, they have mounts on both of the lenses, so you can go and use an app camera and force which lens you want it to use. So you get so much versatility out of it.
So now you've got me. So they have a wide angle for $100. It's a fisheye, right?
The super fish, and they have a version 1 and a version 2. The version 2 has a little thicker bayonet mount.
Mm-hmm.
So the version 2 is just a little bit nicer and more refined. So the new wide lens and the super fish are two amazing. That thing is awesome.
How wide is that compared to your DSLR 35mm?
I think the wide is 18mm.
Okay.
And then the super fish is kind of like a fisheye. I don't know, maybe it's 10,
7
millimeter.
Or 10. Yeah, huh?
Yeah, something like that.
So that gives you that weird distortion. But a 17 millimeter.
That's the thing. That doesn't give you a lot of distortion.
Yeah, that would be cool. Well, that company is at Moment. Actually, you can go to shopmoment.com. And I just to prove that I do carry this Joby in my briefcase. I just pulled it out. It's really handy. So you can you fold it up and you can put your iPhone, or actually this will work with any phone. It's big enough to hold any phone in there.
And a good little trick too, if you use it in video mode, you could actually get a little, you know, we'll kind of make it not so wide, and then you can take a still picture while you're shooting the video with that little white button. Bottom. So you have so much versatility if you know what you're doing.
I'm buying that. That's you say the new wide lens or the new superfish lens?
I would buy both of them. You can do it.
Anthony Tortoriello, atortphotography.com. We'll see you in the chat room. Thanks for joining us.
All right, thanks,
stuff.
Aloha. Yeah.
Aloha. Care. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. See, the magnet is great. You can't... Yeah, it's just like holding on there. All right, now you got me. Maybe I should just forget all these fancy cameras I carry around. Just carry an iPhone and some accessories.
No, you'd be surprised. Honestly, you have so much versatility with it by going in using the video mode, and you can still
get a
nice picture.
That's a clever trick, by the way. So the video mode, when you start shooting video, it crops the sensor.
Yeah, see, I share a lot with the news channels here. I work with Hawaii News Now, which is a big news channel in Hawaii, and a lot of the content I share is that way because I give them the right ratio, the right aspect ratio that way.
See how it looks like it's almost zoomed in a little bit. Yep, and then this is a still picture, so even though you have the video shot, you still can take a still picture as well while you're shooting video.
Or you can just scrub the video and do a screenshot of your...
Right. So that's a photo, and then that's... The video.
Yeah, so we'll bring it in a little closer, and you have that more versatility.
And then the 2X brings it in even closer.
Yep.
Oh,
and then you can use, again, an app like Pro Camera, and then Force, which, you know, you can choose. And that, what is it? Which app is it? I think it's Pro Camera, where you can actually choose. Oh, no, it's video. For the video, it's Filmic Pro. That's their video pro app that I've been using. So you can actually choose which lens you want it to use too, whether the wide, the telephoto, or the dual.
Oh, I have to get that. All right. That's a really good tip. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah.
And as I said, it has a bayonet mount on both of the lenses. So you can take that super wide or the wide angle lens and put it on either one of them. And then you have it's almost distracting how much.
You can't just get the lens. You have to get the mounting system.
Yeah, but the case is pretty nice. I don't know if can you see it?
Let's see. Let's see if we can see it at Anthony's.
I got the black one.
Oh, that's not bad.
Battery. It's simple, clean. It's comfortable. It protects it. I've dropped my phone.
And flip it over so we can see how the camera attaches. Oh, no, that was flipped over. Okay, got it. So the camera, I see. There's the mount right there. And you can choose either. You can choose either hole. Okay. Oh, that's clever.
I could show you the lenses, but I'd have to get up right now.
That's okay. Don't get up. Relax.
All right.
Very good, Anthony. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, you're welcome. Anytime, of course.
Thank you. Really great. Take care.
Yeah, you too, Leo.
All right. Thanks.
Yeah. All right. Take care.
Nice. On short notice. Very good. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It is too hot for sure. not just a trot, but anything. Leif or Leif in Winnipeg. Is it Leif? You like Leif?
Yeah, Leif.
Leif, you like? All right. Hi, Leif. Welcome.
Hi. Oh, yeah. I should change it to L-E-A-F.
Then people would know. Well, I guess if it's, you spell it how? L-I or L-E?
Well, L-I-E-F.
So that's Leif. Okay. And if it were L-E-I-F, it would be Leif. Is that right?
Yeah. It's okay. A whole Icelandic thing.
Ah, it's Icelandic.
Yeah, the Nordics up here in Winnipeg.
Yeah. Winnipeg. Well, yeah, you know why? Because it's freezing. What can I do for you, Leif?
Well, I'm not too sold on the whole Apple. Is it the HomePod?
Yeah, you know, the jury's out. It's not out till December, and the jury's out on if that will be a big thing or not. I would wait for reviews, you bet.
Oh, sorry. I was just, it's just
like. Is your kid's sister bugging you? Is that what's going on there?
Oh, I was just delivering for, we have like a similar Uber Eats.
Oh, up here. Oh, you're delivering. How fun.
And it just had to be. Yeah, the exact
of course. Thing I'd pick up right when you had to work. I'm sorry. You want to finish that up or are you okay?
Oh, no, no. It was all done.
Good.
Sorry about that. It's just, you know, I'm all up on the, you know, MacBook Weekly and.
So you listen to our shows, okay.
Yeah, I even ran into Renee Ritchie. He was in Winnipeg.
Yeah. Nice.
So, it was like, I have a plasma TV that has Toslink audio out.
Right.
And I was looking at this Logitech, because I want to be able to just plug in my, the 3.5, instead of plugging it into my phone all the time and... MacBook, like on the mantle.
Is there for like playing back audio?
Yeah, just for, you know, like, oh, I want to play something like through Bluetooth. Like, is there...
I would use AirPlay, frankly. But the problem with that is you have to buy an Apple TV. That's going to be $99 or more.
I do have that.
Okay, so Apple TV, once you have your iPhone and your Mac... fired up, you can look at the AirPlay icon and be on the menu bar on the Mac, or it'll be in the control center on your iPhone, and you can select that Apple TV, and then audio will just go right through. In fact, when you're listening to music that way, it's better quality than Bluetooth. Not quite as good as the digital audio would be with a Toslink, but I think for most people, AirPlay audio is more than adequate. It will also show album art. You get some additional video features because you're doing it on the Apple TV. I think that's a very good way. I also think the Apple TV, I'm trying to remember if it can see iTunes, because iTunes on your Macintosh is also a audio server. And I'm just trying to remember if there's something special you have to do to make the iTunes available to the Apple TV, but I'm not sure. But if you do that, then you can just play stuff from iTunes and the Apple TV will play it through your computer. Other ways to do this, of course, Chromecast Audio is an inexpensive way to do it. It has a Toslink is an optical digital connection. It's a very high quality connection. So if you have optical connection into your stereo system, you can hook up a Chromecast Audio and then use any app that supports Chromecast. It's kind of like AirPlay. It's still wirelessly connecting to your stereo system. But it's, I think, maybe even higher quality than AirPlay. It's certainly very good quality. And because it's digital to digital to digital, the stereo does the digital to analog conversion. And usually stereos have the best DACs of all of the things in that chain. So Chromecast would be, I think, about a $35 way to add better audio wirelessly. And, of course, you can connect it directly. You mentioned the Toslink, so I'm thinking maybe you want to connect it directly. There are USB to optical audio out. In fact, there are lots of ways to do that, but I think that would probably give you a good result. Or you can buy an external DAC, digital to analog converter, connect that to the USB port on your Macintosh, and then have that go into your stereo via an analog connection. So lots of different ways to do that. I think the easiest thing would be Apple TV, and since you already have it in AirPlay. Home sharing, that's it. Okay, thank you. Emmerich in the chat room is reminding me. If you turn on home sharing on your Apple TV, then the iTunes will show up, and you'll be able to play your iTunes directly into the Apple TV without using AirPlay. It's just another way of doing it, basically. 8888-ASK-LEO. I should have asked him what he's delivering. No, it just make me hungry. Roy, Pasadena, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Roy.
Hi, how are you, Leo?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. Listen, I have a a 4K monitor that is absolutely stunning in appearance. It's driven by a video card with only 2 gigabytes of memory. The system has i7 processor with 20 gigabytes of memory. Now, my friends keep telling me that if I get another video card with more memory, it's going to look better.
No.
I don't think that's
your friends are wrong. Are you getting the full resolution on your full 4K monitor? Of course you are.
Yes, I am.
Yeah. So it can't get more than full resolution. That's as good as it's going to get. What it could conceivably affect is how many 4K monitors you could drive.
I see.
But you've got enough to drive the one, and if you're happy with that, adding more RAM to your video card, which is usually not an option, you'd have to get a new video card, or to your PC is not going to make any difference. The capability of the video card is what determines how many monitors you can drive. As long as you're driving your 4K monitor at full resolution, it's not going to get any better than that.
Okay, one quick question.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with the graphic display, the graphic screen capture free video free app called Snippy.
Yeah. Do you like that?
It quit working with Windows 10.
Yeah.
Screen just turns black. And it was an absolutely wonderfully easy-to-use app.
Yeah.
Did anybody ever replace it?
Well, I think one of the reasons that the folks who make it didn't update it is because there is already screen clipping built into Windows. It's interesting because I used to use a program called Sketch from the Evernote people that did very similar things to Snippy, and they've discontinued Sketch as well. And I guess there's just nobody's going to buy it because they're more rudimentary, but the more rudimentary tools are available already in Windows 10, so it must have killed that business for screen clipping. You know what I'd love to do? I'll tell you what, keep listening. We're going to take a break for news at the top of the hour, Ray, but keep listening, and I'd love to get from the chat room or listeners what they use for screen capture. There are some very significant screen capture utilities, particularly designed around capturing video. But I think there probably are some very good ones out there that still are up to date, that work with Windows 10. So let me know. We'll share that on our website at techguylabs.com. Game DVR and Windows 10. So, James, write these all down, and we will, there's obvious, and this, make this the tip of the show, actually. We'll put this on the website as our tip of the week, how to do a good screen capture. And obviously, control print screen and the snipping tool in Windows 10 is what most people are going to use. But if you want something more sophisticated, what else? ShareX, FastStone Capture for stills. All right, so we're gonna put these together. James is gonna write this down as people put them in the chat room, and while he does that, I'm going to do a little mention for our fine sponsor, Quicken Loans, and Rocket Mortgage. Are you I'm thinking probably at the very moment I'm talking, you're not buying a house, but maybe you are. I know. I mean, Sunday's a big day for open houses, right? Maybe you're at an open house right now. Has this ever happened to you? And you look at this happened to me more than once. We weren't planning on buying a new house. We were planning on moving. But we went, we looked at the house. We said, this is really nice and it's not very expensive. Should we move? This has happened a couple of times. What would be great is if you could then whip out your phone, go to rocketmortgage.com/techguy and apply for a loan. And before you leave, within minutes, show the realtor, yeah, we're approved for a loan. We'd like to make an offer. Wouldn't that be awesome? You can. Quicken Loans is probably the premier mortgage lender in the country. Certainly based on J.D. Power Customer Satisfaction Awards. Year after year, number one in customer satisfaction. But they're also they're geeky. They're very techno-literate. So they've created a product for us geeks that I love that takes the entire mortgage approval process and computerizes it, puts it online. You don't have to talk to a human. There's no phone calls. There's no visits to the bank. You do the whole thing on your phone or your tablet. And they've made deals. They've got partnerships with all the banks and everybody. So you don't have to in any way submit, you don't have to take pictures of your pay stubs or anything. It's all there. And with a touch of a button, you can say, well, here's the financial information you need. And because it's all computerized, you can pick your rate. You can, and they'll give you the rates that are appropriate for you. You can pick your term, of course. And then it's going to churn the numbers. And within minutes, it's going to come up with a loan based on your income, your assets, your credit that is perfect for you. In minutes. And you'll get approval or not. It will all be done in minutes. Rocket Mortgage, it gives you the confidence you need when it comes to buying a house, even if this is your 10th house. In fact, especially if you've been through this before, you know how bad it can get. So having Rocket Mortgage is just a really useful tool in your pocket. Thousands of calculations a second. It's all computerized. It's all online. Here's what you've got to do. Go to rocketmortgage.com/techguy. That's it. Rocket Mortgage. Make a note of it before you go to that open house. Rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Put a bookmark in your browser. So, you know, it's there if you need it. It's for refis, too. And this might be a good time to refi. I know interest rates are going up, ratcheting up slowly. Rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Equal housing lender. They're licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030. They're waiting for you. When it's time to buy, you want a mortgage, or time to refi, go to rocketmortgage.com/techguy. We thank them for their support of the Tech Guy podcast. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches. What else? Smart cars? Sure, we'll talk about that. 8888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. Technology's changing everything. I ordered, you know what sous vide is? You ever hear of that? It's a French term, means under vacuum. It's a kind of cooking that restaurants used to do, but now it's become very popular, thanks to tech, for home cooks, because you can get inexpensive Wi-Fi and Bluetooth-enabled sous vide devices. So sous vide is cooking. Now, don't get crazy about this. I know when I tell my wife about it, she said, I'm not doing that. Let's say you have a nice steak. What's the problem with cooking a thick steak or a thick chicken breast on the grill? By the time the inside's cooked, the outside's burning, right? It's not evenly cooked. So the idea, and restaurants have done this for years, is in sous vide, you heat up a water bath to the temperature you want the food to be at. For a steak, a medium rare steak, is 135 degrees. So you heat it up to 135 degrees. You seal a steak, vacuum seal it, or seal it in a Ziploc bag with no air in it. Put it in there for long enough for the whole steak to get to 135 degrees. It's cooked now. It's safe to eat. Usually it's an hour, maybe a couple hours. Safe to eat. It's cooked. It doesn't look very appetizing, but it's done. It's perfectly cooked. So what you do is then you pop that on the grill for a minute just to sear the sides to get it, you know, looking good and taste and have that crunch. And now you have a perfect medium rare steak. And all of that's possible because technology's made possible these little recirculators like the Anova, which is $100. Amazon was selling it on Prime Day, so I thought, I'm going to get one. It has Bluetooth, so you control it with your phone. And it has a very, very accurate temperature sensor and a little pump that circulates the water and keeps it exactly 135 degrees. Technology's even changing how we cook. Well, I guess that's no surprise. Look at the microwave oven, right? If you want to talk about it, 8888-ASK-LEO. Our last caller before the break was asking for a replacement for a screen snipping tool. He used one called Snippy. And, of course, what is it, Windows key? I can never remember. You can press the print screen key on a Windows keyboard, and it'll print the whole screen. I think Windows key, I can't remember, Windows S, Windows key, Shift S, something like that, will create a little, you show a little scissor and little marching ants, and you can pick part of the screen, clip it, and save that as a screenshot. On the Mac, Command Shift 3 and Command Shift 4 do the same thing. But he wants something better, more powerful. So the chat room's been going crazy over the last 5 minutes, and we have, I think, 20 or 30 screen snipping tools that work with Windows 10. So if you go to techguylabs.com, the answer to that question is we more than answered it, I believe. Techguylabs.com. If it's not up there yet, James is typing. He's typing as fast as he can. He'll get that up there. In fact, that website, keep that in mind. There's no charge. There's no sign up. It's free. It's wide open. It's there 24/7, not just during the show. And it has, what we do is we divide the website into pages, one page per show. This is episode 1,405. So you can go there, and then each page is divided up into hours, 1, 2, and 3. And each hour is divided up into calls or segments from that hour. And you, that way you can go quickly, see which question you want, you know, what's a good snipping tool, go there, click that, and then it will have the question, it'll have the answers, not just from me, but from the chat room. And then eventually, you know, a day or two later, we're going to put audio and video up so you can actually watch or listen. You know, that way you get the experience of the show just on the website, techguylabs.com, and all that's free. There's one thing we do have you sign up for, and it's not for me. I don't collect your email. I'm not interested. I'm not trying to spy on you or anything. But if you want to leave a comment, and I encourage you to do this. If you have a tool, it's not mentioned on the website, you were listening, you don't have to shout at the radio. Just go to the website and add it in the comment. And because we want to kind of reduce spammers, you can sign up with your Twitter, Google, with Facebook. You know, just click that button, and then we know who you are. And I'm not, as I said, collecting that information. It's just to keep spammers from spamming those comments. TechGuyLabs.com. Back to the phones. Jim in North Hollywood. Hi, Jim. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Could I touch on something real quick before I go into my question?
Above the waist or below the waist?
Above.
Okay.
That poor guy, I was over here laughing my ass off. Every athlete in your listening audience was laughing.
What?
His elbow. Oh, the door, my elbow, my ring finger, my little... Most ridiculous. And he's...
Hospital. Hey, sysadmins are very sensitive creatures.
No, but hear me out. I got $1,000 in my pocket that says it's his neck.
Oh.
You guys are jerking him around. Take these pills. Take this surgery.
Oh.
Chiropractor. But they won't tell him that.
They'll just stretch his neck out a little bit and his elbow won't hurt anymore?
How's this, Leo? I get the same condition when I hold my desktop phone to my ear for a long period of time.
Sure.
So what do you think I have right now? Same condition. Yeah. The same two fingers go numb on me when I hold my phone like this.
Oh, wow.
It's not that I'm holding the phone. It's because of my neck. Because
you're tilting. But how would your neck affect your fingers?
Are you kidding? Break your neck and you're paralyzed.
Oh, you're right. That's a good point. All right. Good. I hope he's listening.
Now, mid-back, right around L, you start getting numbness in your thighs. And that, it's all along.
I have a pain all up and down my right thigh. And I think it was because I was sitting on an exercise ball for the last 15 years. So I'm sitting in a chair today, and it feels much better.
What you need? A good hot soak, massage, and some good stretching. And you'll feel like $1,000,000. Same for that other guy.
I'm doing that tonight. Thank you, Jim.
No problem.
You talked me into it.
My problem with my computer, I have this Dell Inspiron 500 something.
Yeah.
And I don't know what, but all of a sudden it started to really drag on startup. Okay, it drags. Okay, fine. Every hour on that exact minute, my browser uses all the CPU and it's struggling to do. And if you're playing billiards, it just quits. If you're doing an email, you're typing, nothing's happening.
Wow. Something's going on at the top of the hour. That's interesting that it's time-based like that. That actually makes me a little nervous. That means that something on the computer is running on a schedule.
Yep.
And it's using up all your cycles. It's not just your browser. It's something else that's running, and it's using up all your cycles. Now, there's a couple of possibilities. It could be, you know, Windows has an indexing service. It has a lot of services that run in the background. And it could be that service is kicking in just to index files. It's slowing your computer down. Tell me about this Inspiron. How old is it?
Oh, I can't be sure. Let me see. 530S, I think.
Okay. The other possibility that worries me more, and is probably what's worrying you as well, is that it has some sort
of... Is it a request that's going out?
Some sort of spyware on there.
Or is it gathering up everything and sending it out every hour?
Maybe. I can't promise you it's not. So... there's a couple of things you can do. Windows is famous for something I call bit rot. Windows, over even 6 months, but certainly over a year or two, does slow down. It does get a little funky and weird.
But this is so precisely on that.
The hour means there's a schedule.
Every day it's a different number, you know. Yeah. It depends when I start it. You see?
It's 1 hour in each. That's interesting.
So
it's not on the top of the hour. It's on 1 hour of use.
Today's number is 29. Last night was 17. The day before, I think 11. You know, it's all the, and you can tell because I often, when I'm on hold on the phone or I'm just idling away, I play online billiards, and all of a sudden,
All right. So here's a couple of things to do. I'd like to know what this is. And as I said, I don't know that it's something bad. It could be something Windows is doing. But I'd like to know. One thing would be reboot into safe mode, which will turn off everything but necessary things. Now, you're not going to want to stay there for very long. But just stay there for an hour. See if it still happens. If it doesn't, good. That means your fundamentals are fine. But, you know, there's something that's running when you boot up into full mode. Shoot, I have to take a break for an ad. I will give you some of the other tips when we return. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So safe mode is one way just to kind of eliminate bad drivers, that kind of thing. Actually, I don't know how useful that is as a diagnostic because you can't run in safe mode, so you wouldn't want to stay in safe mode.
Can you hear me, Leo?
Yeah, I hear you.
Hey, Leo. I think I remember doing an experiment that I said, okay, I opened Opera to see if it would do the same in Opera. Because I saw lots of people complaining that, you know, Firefox can sometimes be quite a hog and so forth,
right.
You know. And I'm sorry, I can't remember precisely, but I kind of think I remember that it did it in Opera too.
Okay.
So it's in the machine, not
right.
The browser.
That's another good experiment. Is it the browser doing this? Yeah. If the browser's closed, does it still do this?
I studied for 2 weeks before I called you. I've never been able to get through to you.
All right. I'm going to give you some more elaborate tools. Of course, there's
the Windows scheduler.
Yes.
And looked, and it said zero things.
Nothing going good.
Zero
that's good.
Zero, zero,
that's
zero.
Good. You can also, though, look at services. So Windows has a bunch of services. If you hit
Task Manager.
Well, Task Manager is another one. That's right, but it's not the same as services. So
there's a services tab in
there's task. A services. Oh, there is. Okay, so you can see what services are running, or you can hit Windows key X and look at all the services that are
and
running.
Look at the graphs.
Yeah, well, because under management, it'll tell you what services start up and what don't.
It goes 55, 82, 100.
Yeah, I wouldn't get all CPU tied into CPU usage because it's normal for things to use it. But it does sound like if that's happening every 59.9 minutes, there's something
right on the dot.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So the other thing you can do is go out and get a very useful tool from Microsoft. They have a site called SysInternals.
Uh-huh.
So you can Google SysInternals, and then they have something called Process Explorer and Auto Runs. These are two free apps you can download. I always put these on every Windows machine. Process Explorer is like Task Manager on steroids. It tells you a lot more, and you can even watch. So you can get to minute 59 and watch Process Explorer. Click the tab that says CPU cycles, and you can see what process is using all that. Right? You can immediately figure out, well, I see what's doing it. Then you're going to have to do some homework to figure out what is that process? Where does it come from? Who's doing it?
Well,
and then they have another one called Auto Runs, which will tell you what starts up at the beginning. If you go into safe mode and it does go away, you must use Auto Runs then to figure it out because Auto Runs will tell you what's starting up if you're not in safe mode. So these are two very useful tools for diagnosing this kind of thing.
It has to be something drastic and offbeat. Because it just overwhelms the machine.
Yeah. It could, you know, here's a scenario that would be benign.
It's not some Windows update.
Yeah, well, here's a benign scenario, okay? So the Inspiron's slowing down anyway. It's slowing down for a variety of reasons. It has a spinning disk. Those things get slow and sluggish because of errors on the disk. It could be you've got cruft in there. You've got a lot of stuff. Whatever. It's normal. Windows slows down over time. Then the system indexing service, which starts every hour, to index your files, which normally just takes a few seconds and just happens transparently, suddenly, because of the issues, the drive issues, is taking minutes or even longer, and that's really slowing your machine down. Microsoft Windows indexing can do exactly this. So it could be a combination of old beat-up drive plus benign but normal behavior on Windows' part that's giving you this weird hourly slowdown.
One thing I did do to this machine, I researched the daylights out of it, and I went into the BIOS, I touched the BIOS, and I loaded it with as much memory as physically possible.
Ah, how much memory do you have in it?
A whole bunch.
Good.
As much as this.
Yeah, because they came. That came with 2 gigs, which is another source of issues.
I got it to six something. Six something.
All right. Lack of RAM could also be an issue. I would look at the hard drive, and you might want to just reformat. and reinstall. That can make a difference. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. Why do computers slow down? Well, for a variety of reasons, some benign, some not so benign. I mean, it could be, of course, malware. Jim's worried because his computer every hour gets really sluggish. And it could be that there's some virus on there that you didn't detect that's running every hour to upload all your passwords and keystrokes to a bad guy. Could be, but it's not necessarily the case because it could be completely benign as well. One of the scenarios could be, and this happens all the time, older computers with spinning drives, not the new solid-state drives so much, but with those spinning drives, over time, they become less and less reliable. Sectors become harder to read. Now, the computer's not going to give up on a hard-to-read sector. It's just going to try hard over and over again. It's going to try and try and try. And that slows it down because it's spending a lot of energy just trying to get that data off the sector. Combine that, let's say, with Microsoft's indexing service, which periodically goes out and looks at all the files on the hard drive to speed up searching. Well, what if you've got a hard drive that's got sector errors, is sluggish, is slow? That's the, you know, the result of these sector errors. And you combine that with, let's say, an hourly read of the hard drive that churns it a lot, that's hitting it hard. That would explain it. So it could also be something completely benign, a normal Windows operation. My suspicion is it's that. It's much more likely just as over time as these hard drives get old and slow. That normal operations, which used to kind of go by, it would happen every 59 minutes, but you wouldn't notice because it took a second. Now it takes a minute, you're going to notice. There's all sorts of things. I think these two tools, everybody should have them. They're free from Microsoft. Auto Runs and Process Explorer, they're available on Microsoft's site at just Google SysInternals. And Mark Krasinovich, the guy who wrote them, actually wrote them independently of Microsoft. Microsoft liked them so much, they hired him, bought all his – he's got dozens of tools on that SysInternals page. And now he's one of the chief architects of Microsoft's cloud service, Azure. He's quite a good novelist, of all things. So that's a really nice free tool that Microsoft offers. And I don't know why they don't bundle it, probably because it's for more advanced users. It's kind of like Task Manager on steroids. But it's going to take some detective work. Figure out what it is. When you're running Process Explorer, for instance, run it at that 59th minute of the hour where you expect the slowdown and watch. You're going to see your CPU. You can actually sort processes, the things that are running. Computers running hundreds of things in the background all the time. So you'll have that list of things that are running in the background, and you'll see one of them start to get climb up the list as a CPU hog. That's the one. Now, if it's the Microsoft Windows indexing service, nothing you can do about that. That just tells you it's not something. It's benign. It's not something malicious. It's probably a slow hard drive. Oftentimes, formatting the drive, reinstalling Windows fixes these problems. Even better, maybe replacing the drive and reinstalling Windows. There are lots of good tools for this kind of stuff, and it just takes a little bit of detective work. The problem is, for most people, this is, you know, can I just bring it to somebody? We got to find. This was a call yesterday too. We got to find some way to identify good, reliable tech guys in every community. So there's somebody you can bring it to. As of now, it's kind of hit or miss. Tom in North Carolina, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Tom.
Hey there, Leo. You're the man.
Thank you.
I got a question. As far as my system, I got a Windows 10. And all of a sudden now, very intermittently, I get that when I try to go to a website like Google, it says that I have the Google DNS server is not responding.
So let me tell you what a DNS server is, and I'll tell you what you can do to fix this. It's the way the internet works. It's the internet's phone book. So when you enter Google.com, you can't actually get – there is no website called Google.com. It's just as if you tried to, you know, call your phone and say, call Leo. The phone says, well, what's his number? So DNS, the domain name system, is a lookup. Your computer will look up, what is Google.com? What's the real thing it needs is an IP address. It's like the phone number. It's the unique IP address of Google.com. And once it gets this, it will be able to go out and the web browser will go out and get it. Now, if it can't get that information, that's going to be challenging. That's going to be – doesn't know how to get there. I'll tell you where it looks. So DNS is pretty sophisticated. First, it looks in local memory. There's a DNS cache. All computers have them. Have I been to this site in the last – you know, before we – last time we were turned on? It might be in the cache. Let me check there. If it doesn't find it there, it'll query – it will go off and query your router on your network. Say, do you know where Google.com is? Are you my mommy? And if it doesn't know, then it'll go to your internet service provider. That's the main one, right? It goes to the internet service provider. Are you my mommy? And the internet service provider says, yes, Google.com. That's 8.8.8.8, and your browser's happy. Now, if the internet service provider doesn't know, it has places it can go. It can go up the chain all the way to the 13. There's exactly 13 root servers for DNS. There's 13 systems spread all over the world that maintain the master phone book. And when you change your internet address, you actually get put in that master phone book. When you go out and buy, like I bought my domain name, leolaporte.com, it gets put in that master phone book and then propagates down to all the domain name servers at all the internet service providers all over the world. So that's the chain. So you're getting an error, a DNS error. And it's interesting. It's not something you usually see. It could indicate something's broken in the software on the machine. Who's your internet service provider?
It's Time Warner.
So it could be that their servers aren't very good. The nice thing is you can use other domain name servers. You don't have to use your internet service providers. That's the default. But you can tell your router or even your computer, I don't want to use that one. You can use Google's, for instance, which is 8.8.8.8 and 8.8.4.4. And Google's are pretty responsive. Verizon has servers. Lots of companies. And these are public servers anybody can use. My favorite, and this might be a good solution for you, is a company called OpenDNS. I think they were bought by Cisco recently. OpenDNS.com. So there's that DNS again, right? They maintain the best, in most cases, the best DNS servers out there. And they have some nice features. They'll block malware. They won't let you go to bad sites. And they, you can even buy domain name filtering to keep if you have kids. Or a lot of businesses use it. We use OpenDNS here at our business to keep employees from getting into trouble online. It will block searches we don't like. So OpenDNS.com. And they have instructions there on how to use them. Or you can just go to the very bottom of the page and it actually has the numbers to use for OpenDNS. You'd go into your router would be the best place to set that. But they have instructions on the site. So that's the first thing I would try is just say, well, maybe Time Warner's DNS is not very responsive.
Yeah, let me ask you this. It's very intermittent, and it does seem to have happened since I bought a new router.
And it could be the router settings are messed up. Yeah. So you might want to go in the router settings and make sure you've got the proper settings for Spectrum, your internet service provider. And you might, if those look normal, you might want to try replacing them. And you can do that in the router settings, perhaps with OpenDNS. I really like OpenDNS. Not sure what's going on there, though. It does sound like there's something in the configuration that's messed up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Or get an Eero. Eero, our sponsor today, is this is what I use as my router. And I have to say I love the Eero system. I can easily change. I could show you how to change the DNS on the Eero. So Eero is an improvement over traditional Wi-Fi. Notice there are three of them. This is the original Eero. There's now the new Eero, which has a new base unit. Looks the same. But the Eero base unit now is tri-band. They have 2 5 gigahertz and 1 2.4 gigahertz radio, and it's a lot faster. So you're going to plug this into your cable modem or your DSL modem into your internet access. You notice there's another Ethernet port. I have a switch connected to that extra Ethernet port, which gives me more wired ports. But then this does something pretty magical. It pairs with Eero substations all over the house. You can get as many as you want. The new Eero system is so good. It's about twice as fast as the original, and it comes with these new Eero beacons. Let me show you those. They just plug into the wall. They even have a little nightlight, so I keep them in the hall. So it's actually really cool. And It is the solution to bad Wi-Fi. See, there's the Eero beacon. You know what? You shouldn't be thinking about Wi-Fi. You shouldn't be worried about it. One of the things I love about the Eeros, unlike most routers, they're updated regularly. They keep them secure. They keep them performant. And they even adapt your network as things change. So they know you're, say, watching Netflix. They say, well, we should switch this over to the 5 gigahertz band so that we get better performance on the 5 gigahertz. It's really quite a remarkable system. As I said, I use Eero at home. Here's my home network using the Eero Plus. You can see all the connected devices, 39 connected devices. And, you know, here's a great thing. You can also assign the devices. So this is Michael's game machine, so I can name it so I know. And look what I'm going to do. This is really cool. I'm going to assign it to Michael. So everybody in the house can have a profile. Now, if it's bedtime and Michael's playing a little bit too much, I can disable his internet. See, here's Michael. Watch. Press the pause button. He's offline. Press it again. He's back online. Doesn't affect Leo or Lisa. Just Michael. Good night, Michael. Time to go to bed. Another thing I love about the family profiles is it allows you to do some security. Eero has a new network security feature called Eero Plus, which is fantastic. It prevents malware, malicious sites, phishing sites. I do that for the whole network. And then you can have additional settings in the family profile. So I can schedule a pause, which is nice. And I can have filters that are just for Michael's devices. Safe search filters out inappropriate sites. I can filter out adult content, illegal or criminal content, violent content. You notice I've got that all turned on. Michael's 14. We want to block all that stuff. And I can see all the devices I've assigned to Michael, which is fantastic. You can even do it with the Amazon Echo. I can say, Echo, pause Michael's network. And Michael's network will go into pause mode, and he will scream, what happened to the internet? I guess it's down. Maybe you should go to bed. The Eero is my favorite new Wi-Fi mesh device. Highly recommend it. In fact, you can even save money if you go to Eero.com and select overnight shipping and use our offer code TECHGUY to make it free. Eero, no more problems with the Wi-Fi. Eero.com. Better turn on Michael's Wi-Fi. He's going to kill me. Are you doing an ad again? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Michael Cozio, our musical director, showing extremely poor musical taste. But that's okay, Michael. It's okay. Just you didn't play the drum solo. So all is forgiven. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the number. 888-827-5536. We go back to the phones to Denver, Colorado. Steve is on the line. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Doing good. Hey, I have a suggestion on the screen capture.
Oh, good.
I used to use a tool called Snagit. I don't know if that popped into
Snagit.
Your...
Snagit. Yeah, I remember Snagit.
Chat room.
They're still around. That was a great program. Of course, they made some very... much more expensive versions for people who needed professional features. But Snagit was pretty inexpensive, as I remember. That's from TechSmith.
Yeah. I think 20, yep, yep.
Yeah.
It has lots of little different features, you know, taking screen to text and, you know, doing stuff like that. So pretty neat stuff.
There's a free trial, and I think it's $20 to buy. Good tip. And then, of course, they make for more sophisticated users Camtasia, which a lot of people use on Windows to record video for, you know, presentations and gaming and stuff like that. Good. Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Yeah. So here's my question. I've got a fairly new Android, a Moto G running Android 7.0.
Good.
Everything I can tell says it's up to date on build, you know, et cetera.
It's not.
Unfortunately.
So the latest version of Android is 7. But Motorola has not been keeping it up to date. The current version on my Google Pixel phone, which is the most up-to-date Android phone, is 7.1.2. But like you, on my Samsungs, for instance, 7.0. So you're a little behind. The thing to look for in the updates is make sure that it's getting the monthly security patch. That's more important than feature updates.
And how do you make sure
it will be in this? It will be in the settings under updates, under updates about the phone. It'll show you not only the version of Android, but also the latest security patch. The current one is July. We're in the month of July. Usually is about a week into the month that you'll see that. If you're, you know, back in May or April or March, this is a
problem. Mine's March 1st, 2017.
Yeah, so this is a problem because there have been flaws in Android that have been patched since then that you don't have.
How do I change that? I mean, I don't see where I can change it.
Motorola has not made the pledge. A few manufacturers have to promptly put out these updates. I don't know how bad this is. I'm of increasingly the opinion that it's bad. That Android has a lot of flaws. We're seeing a lot of holes in Android, and it's kind of critical you get the security patches. But nobody is really keeping completely up to date. Even my Samsung Galaxy S8, which is a very modern, much more expensive phone, is not getting the latest patches. I think it's back in June still. The only phone that I know of gets the patches is Google's own phones, the Pixels. So my recommendation these days, if you're getting an Android phone, I love that Moto G, by the way. That is, and you got the third generation. That is a great phone.
Yeah, I love it.
An amazing price.
Screen yeah. quality. You know, I think yeah. I paid $100 for it or something. And, you know, it's hardware-wise, it's great. It's just I'm having a few little issues. And just on the update, when I click on system updates, it says your device's software is up to date.
Right.
So it's acting.
It's up to date from Motorola's point of view and from your carrier's point of view. So the problem is getting updates requires cooperation from three different entities. The updates come from Google. Google's responsible for Android. So Google makes the patch. Then they ship the patch off to Motorola and to your carrier. Who's your carrier?
Consumer Cellular.
So that may be some of the problem. I don't know. But Consumer Cellular is ultimately responsible because it comes over their network for pushing it to you. So Motorola is the first to get it from Google. Motorola, and by the way, the nice thing about those Moto phones is they're pretty pure Android. They don't add a lot of junk. They add a few nice Motorola features, and that's it. But that's the first thing Motorola does. It says, oh, well, let's check. Let's make sure this patch doesn't break anything. And they make sure it all works with the existing, you know, software on your phone. Once they verify it works with the software and hardware, then they go tell the carriers, AT&T, Verizon, Sprint, T-Mobile, Consumer Cellular, whoever, okay, here's the fix. Please send this to our customers. This is the difference between Apple and Android. Apple just pushes the darn thing out. It doesn't have to ask permission because it used, you know, it's mostly historical that they have such clout in the market. They said, hey, we're not going to ask you, AT&T. We're just going to push it. So as soon as so Apple is a one-stage process. They're the Google in this process. They patch it and push it. So iPhones are always up to date. Google phones, you have to get through, you know, Google does it, and they do it as promptly as Apple does, but then you have to get it through the manufacturer and then through the carrier. And I don't know who's to blame on that. If other Moto G people are you know, have later patches, then it's your cellular carrier. But it may very well be Motorola not moving fast. A lot of, you know, it costs money to push these out. It costs money to vet them. And sometimes companies, especially on a cheaper phone, don't do that. You're in good shape. You at least have Nougat.
Yeah.
There are people still running Gingerbread, which is horrendously vulnerable.
Hmm. Well, let me ask you specifically what my issue is. So I've got an issue that shows up intermittently where all of a sudden the various apps on my phone start to kind of get jerky, I'll call it. You know, they kind of, I don't want to call it vibrate, but they kind of move up and down on the screen. You know, I switch over to the, the view where you can see all the different apps.
So is it movement? Is it like scrolling that makes it hesitant? Or is it they're just sitting there and jerking around?
No, they're just sitting there and jerking around, and sometimes it throws me into the clock function,
okay.
And then the clock function says it's repeating. And
you have a broken digitizer. So the screen, you know, there's a part that's the screen, and underneath the screen there's a thing that senses touches, and it's sensing touches. They're phantom touches. That means the digitizer's damaged. That is a physical hardware problem in most cases. Now, before you take it in or send it to Motorola, they're going to suggest, and I would suggest, you reset the phone. You go into the settings and under backup and reset, and you reset it to factory settings. That's going to lose all your data, but so back up before you do that. Most Android phones are backed up automatically to Google anyway. But that may fix it, because maybe it's just a software bug. Some of the software got damaged. But what you just described to me sounds symptomatic of a physical problem with a digitizer. And if that's the case, the only fix is to get the phone replaced.
Okay.
But it's recent, right? You bought it in the last year.
No, less than 6 months, right. I think, ago.
So you have a credible case for getting a replacement.
Okay.
You probably have to get it from Motorola. Did you get it from Consumer Cellular?
Through Target, yes. I bought it at Target.
Bring it back to Target then.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry about
that. The problem is I don't know how to recreate it. It's random. It's like weird.
Yeah, the worst, isn't it? Because an intermittent problem is so hard to prove. They might not even believe you. Or if they believe you, they'll say, well, yeah, but until I see it, I can't tell what it is. So you just got to hope. One thing you can do, Rick is reminding me, there. If you go into the developers section, turn on developers, there's a little setting in the developers features that shows a dot where it thinks there's a touch. And you could turn that on and notice when it's jiggling if you see dots, like somebody's touching the phone. That would be a sure sign that the digitizer's messed up. I like that Moto G. I think it's a great phone. I think you got a bad one, or it got damaged.
How do you get into this developers thing?
It's under the settings. It's complicated. You know, Google it, because you have to press stuff five times, and it's a complicated thing. I'm increasingly of the opinion that Android bothers me. I love Android. I love Android. But I'm seeing so many security issues, and so many Android phones are not kept up to date. I'm starting to worry. This operating system is troubled. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You have to go to settings, and then you look at the about this phone, and you tap it five times. You keep tapping it. Actually, maybe it's 10 times. After you tap it a certain number of times, it says, you're getting close. Three more touches, you'll be developer. Then you keep tapping, and then, hey, you're in developer mode. And then in developer mode, you can... It's crazy. Then you're in developer mode, and you can turn on the touch, visible touch. I don't know. I love my Pixel phone. It's a great camera. It's a great operating system. It's much more configurable than iPhones. But I'm starting to think that the only safe phone is an iPhone. And certainly a lot of security experts say that, which is depressing to me. But it's not really Google's fault. It's just kind of the nature of it, how it evolved. Google doesn't have control over the carriers and the manufacturers. It's an open source operating system. They have very limited control. And that's one of the reasons I like it. I like open source. I want to support it. It's frustrating. Build number, not about. Build number. Okay. I don't have my Pixel with me, so. You might as well spin a rubber chicken over your head. You might as well. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Last segment? No, can't be. Show's almost over. Oh, let me see how many calls I can get in here while I've got you. Reed is on the line from St. Louis, Missouri. Hello, Reed.
Hey, how you doing, Leo?
I'm well. How are you?
Oh, just perfect.
Good.
Hey, I was. I have a Samsung. It's just a 1080p. But what I'm looking for is I'm hard of hearing, and I'm looking for an audio solution where I don't have to turn bother the wife, turn the sound up so high that it hurts her ears. But I can wear headphones
but you want her to be able to hear the speakers still.
Yes. Yeah. She can still hear the TV, and I can, but there's a latency issue with some of the solutions I've seen.
Yeah. Does your Samsung have a headphone jack?
Yes, I believe it does.
Okay. The only issue there would be if the headphone jack disconnects the TV speakers, which I think it most often does. Your wife would suddenly not be able to hear. I bought my mom some really great headphones for TVs from Sennheiser, and she loves them. She's 84. She can hear perfectly well, doesn't bother anybody. But I think that they connect to the headphone jack. So what you probably want, yeah, the Sennheiser TV, they make them TV headphones, the RS-135. They're really good. She really likes those. And they're not expensive. They're, you can get them, you know, around $100. But we probably are going to want the latency people are talking about comes from Bluetooth solutions, wireless solutions.
Okay.
Because that will be an issue. Bluetooth isn't going to be able to keep up with the picture, and so you're going to get a little behind on the lip sync will start to fail.
That's what I've heard. I've heard there's a external box that you can get. And
here's the deal. The reason Bluetooth is a bad choice is because the wireless is coming from the TV. But you can buy boxes that connect to the TV, hardwired to the TV's audio out. You're not going to be able to use the headphones, so I hope the TV has some sort of audio out.
Yes, it does.
It does. Okay. So you can get a box, and then those can be wireless headphones. The Sennheisers, there's no latency issue.
Oh, okay.
You're just going to have to get an adapter. So if you have audio out, RCA jacks or optical out. Most modern TVs have optical out.
Yes, this one does have an optical.
So then you need a box that takes the optical out and either powers headphones separately, in which case you could use if the box takes a wireless and has a headphone jack, you can plug your Sennheisers in. I love those. And then I would imagine that there are headphones that actually have a box with a connection like that.
And she could listen to her, you know, like volume at 10.
Right. Yes, separate controls. I'm thinking that the higher end, I'm looking at the Sennheisers on their website, that they have some higher end ones that don't connect via the headphone jack, because that's not what you want. You would ideally like it connecting to another jack, and then you can control the volume through the headphones box, so turn yours up, and she controls the volume through the remote control.
That'd be perfect.
Yeah.
I would go
on Amazon, look at the Sennheisers. I just have to figure out which ones that your homework will be to figure out. I mean, by the way, they range from $100 to thousands, so don't spend thousands. But I would imagine that there are ones that will work perfectly. Somebody says the SR-120 Mark II. Let me ask you, 2557 in the chat room, the SR-120 Mark II, what kind of connection to the TV do they have? That would be the question. And if you do see latency issues, wired will solve that. The latency is only because of the wireless.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's what I was also curious about.
Yeah, that's where it gets introduced. A good system like the Sennheisers are going to use, not use Bluetooth, often will use infrared or another system that will be speedier than Bluetooth. Bluetooth's a little slower. Yeah.
Oh, great.
All right. Okay. So, yeah. I like those Sennheisers. Have fun.
Oh, yeah. Will do. Thank you very much.
It is a problem, isn't it? You know, I'm a little hard of hearing myself. There are also solutions that will link your hearing aids to the TV. My problem with hearing aids is they aren't full sound. You know, they're just there to improve voice. And, yeah, you'll hear the voices great, but you won't hear, you know, nowadays with the way, you know, even TV shows are mixed, and certainly movies. You want to get all that sound. You want to hear the rumbles of the tanks and the, you know, the tweeting of the birds as well as the voices. Kayla in Long Beach is next. We're going to talk to Kayla in just a moment. Her niece is turning 8. She wants to become a programmer. Oh, I love that. I'll help you with that. Hi, Kayla.
Hello, Leo. How are you?
Isn't that great? An 8-year-old. I am great. You have an 8-year-old niece who wants to learn how to write computer software.
Yeah, she just went to coding camp, and now...
And she loved it?
She loved it, absolutely loved it. So she wants to do all things programming now.
Oh, good for her. And you know, there's going to be challenges as she gets older, just as there's always has been. It's sad, you know, when girls are into math and now in computers, the boys, especially when you get to junior high and high school, are going to try to discourage her. So let's get her off to the right foot now.
Definitely.
So she's got the confidence, and she can laugh in their faces, say, I can code rings around you.
Exactly.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah. So what did she learn at Code Camp? What kind of stuff did she do there?
That I'm unsure of.
Okay. So you might ask her, you know, what would you like to do? Because she may already have something. For instance, often used, there are some really great programs for kids that age. If she has an iPad, there are some really fun things like Tinker, T-Y-N-K-E-R, and, of course, Apple's own Swift Playgrounds. These are designed to get kids into coding. Does she have a computer? What is she?
Yes, she does.
Okay, a Windows machine?
They have both, a Windows and a Mac.
And a Mac. Does she have an iPad?
Yeah.
Okay, so so certainly the iPad has many good choices. The thing about the iPad is more point and touch than type. But at that age, that might not be a bad thing. And then if she gets more sophisticated, there's some really excellent programs designed. For instance, there's Alice at alice.org. It's a block-based, innovative computer programming language designed for kids. It was designed by Randy Pausch at Carnegie Mellon. And it's fun for them. It's accessible. And it's very easy to use. And it's absolutely free.
Awesome.
So Alice is good. A lot of, and this is why I asked, a lot of camps use other systems like Scratch. If you go to scratch.org, that's another one kind of designed for kids. That's, I think it's scratch.org. Actually, it's not coming up, so let me look and see if I typed it wrong. Yeah, scratch.mit.edu. See, MIT and Carnegie Mellon are in competition. Scratch is really fun for kids, with a lot of kid-friendly tools and examples. She can make games, and it will teach her fundamental concepts like loops and so forth. So she's going to be learning some significant stuff. Eventually, she's going to want to use real programming languages, but I think to get started, Scratch or Alice are both excellent choices. And then on the iPad, Apple's Swift Playgrounds or Tinker, T-Y-N-K-E-R. That's actually quite a few coding programs for kids on the iPad.
Perfect.
Get her going. We really want to encourage, her to do this, because we need more women in technology, so that technology is friendly to all. So get her going, and well done, Andy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Next step, if she didn't have a computer or didn't have an iPad, you can get a Raspberry Pi for $35, which is a little portable computer. If she's interested in hardware, the Raspberry Pi is a great choice as well. So this is actually a very good time to get her into this, because there's really some good resources.
Awesome. Yeah, we can't wait.
Nice.
Yeah.
And keep playing with her. Keep, you know, you might have to do a little jollying along, but I'm really glad that she went to App Camp. That's really good.
Yeah, I was, she's always wanted to be a mathematical engineer, and now she wants to be a programmer. So
it's very, very closely related. It's very closely related. And then if she's got that kind of musical aptitude, there are programming tools that are more musically focused. There's a lot of stuff out there. So it just depends on kind of what her interests are and the kinds of things she likes.
Awesome.
Yeah. Hey, I'm glad you called.
Yeah, thank you for your help.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.